Welcome aboard, you people. Starship Rokan Show with Anna DeBlasis right here on 720 WGN.
Teacher protests went to my alma mater today. It was outside Lane Tech High School. I know Lauren's been reporting. They're in the loop as well. So they are demonstrating in force, huge numbers across the city.
At the downtown, I just came from Staten Lake, and I was walking down Lake, and I looked south at Dearborn,
mm-hmm.
and it looked like one of those movies where there's a wave coming on shore, you know, like you're in a city, and all of a sudden there's a wave.
A red wave?
It was a red wave. It was what it was. And it was like this, as far as the eye could see.
Oh, yeah.
A sea of red.
All
the teachers wearing their red t-shirts. And they were heading toward me. So I started running. Mm-hmm. It was like Jumanji a little bit. Mm-hmm. I started running. Now I'm not the best runner.
No, you don't have a lot of experience running.
As
we've talked about.
No.
You're not really the guy who signs up for the marathons or the 10Ks, really even the 5Ks.
Nope.
Well, 3K? Have you done a 3K?
I have people run for me.
You have people for that.
Yes. 3K. Okay. What is a 3K? What is that?
I don't know if that exists, but I think it does.
I'm sure there is.
Or you can walk a 5K.
I think you can crawl. I could probably crawl a 3K. That's not the point. These people are in mass downtown. It is in just a huge number of protesters.
Yeah.
So
huge show of force.
Yeah. There are how many teachers?
Close to 25,000, I believe.
Yeah.
Total.
But if you include the support staff, that's much. I think it's like 32,000.
Right.
And they're out there too.
Right. Because that's an additional 7,500, I believe.
I am not a Chicago Police Department counter, you know, because they have a person that is responsible for counting. 1, 2, 3, 4. Don't talk to me. Don't interrupt me.
75, 102, 26.
Right. So they tend to give it that number. Like if you looked at that right now, they go, but that's about 3 million people. But
7 million were at the lakefront for the Air and Water Show this year.
It's over 10,000, I'll bet.
There's no question.
Yeah, and you don't want to mess with the pros at single file lines. They know what they're doing.
Well, they're right. That's true.
Hey, get in line. Yeah, you know, they should have students out there actually yelling at them about not being in line properly.
Pay attention.
All right, everybody. All right, get a buddy. Hold hands with your buddy.
We are chanting right now. Lori Lightfoot, get on the right foot.
Makes it easier to remember, guys. Come on.
Kind of rhymes.
Of rhymes.
Actually, with the teachers, maybe they got, that's too simple. I would rather do something in iambic pentameter.
I have a haiku I prepared for this particular. We're very creative with the speeches.
This chant is not grammatically correct, guys. We need to change it.
Lori Lightfoot,
get on the right foot.
Lori Lightfoot,
get on the right foot.
Lori Lightfoot.
You know, it only was a couple of months before someone could use that chant, right? I hope that doesn't really
resonate.
I hope it doesn't catch on. No.
Why not?
I didn't like it the first time I heard it.
Mm.
We had a union spokesperson say it to us, and I'm like, I don't think that's the right thing. I really don't.
If you're gonna have a protest, you got to have those things.
Would you like
part of it?
We have another chant.
Oh, let's hear it.
Okay.
Chicago is a union town. Get up, get down. Chicago is a union town. Get up, get down. Chicago is a union town.
I remember that was. I remember actually seeing that on Soul Train once. That was like when you do the dance, you know, through the people
down the middle.
I think that was part of
it. As everyone sort of claps on the side.
Right. There was a catchy. Get up, get down. All right. I don't know. All right, here we go. We've got more.
More.
What do we want?
Fair contract.
When do we want it?
Now.
What do we want?
A fair contract.
When do we want it?
Now.
Okay. So there's your standard. That's your standard.
I have a whole bunch more if you need it later.
Get out, really.
How many more did they do? These are teachers.
This is what democracy looks like.
Mm-hmm. Saw that.
Shut it down is a big one. Let's see, what's one of the other ones?
Well, fair contract is interesting because I think a lot of people will stop and go, well, they're getting a 16% raise.
Right. So if you argue for 5 months and you're looking at a 16% raise and they offer to take away 3% of that raise, what raise would you get in 4 more months of conversation?
They'd know the answer. Some of the people out there would definitely. And by the way, you can definitely see the influence of the art teachers because those signs they're carrying, have you seen them? I mean, sometimes you see protests and everyone's kind of got the like three different variations of the same thing. These are artfully done, interesting slogans with artwork. There are some with Rom's face and Lori's face and like a pantomime going on.
Let
I'm
Rom
not Rom.
Go. Let Rom go.
Well, they're saying that they're calling Mayor Lightfoot another Rom, which
that's
not quite fair.
That's not right. They're the same height, but other than that, are these paper mache?
I didn't see paper mache out there. Oh, you're right. That is something.
You got to do paper mache if you're a teacher. I mean, they're the only people who actually know how to do something in paper mache. Because when you give it to the kids, it's just a big blobby mess of white, stuff.
You got to put the balloon in there. And yeah, that's difficult.
There's a whole thing. All right. We'll be covering this throughout the afternoon.
For real.
Yeah. Right? And Lauren will have the traffic updates. As people are either trying to get in or out of downtown. This is going to be a fairly significant.
But the highlight, I think, and I know Kim's been reporting this, and we have been throughout the day, and we'll continue to here on WGN Radio, but unlikely that a deal will be reached today, but there is some movement is what we're hearing, and that's, I guess, good news. Welcome news.
Matt, Cranes has the latest on that. We'll be joined by A.D. Quigg after the bottom of the hour news, but first, Ben Bradley is going to join us after Lauren Lapka tells us what's happening on the roadways.
Well, obviously, the Chicago Teachers Union is marching around the loop, and right now, LaSalle is closed between Van Buren and Lake. Randolph is closed between State and Wells, and now Jackson is closed between Wells and State. More closures are expected throughout the demonstration. Also, filming of the movie The Trial of the Chicago 7 has shut down Balbo between Michigan and Columbus until 7 p.m.
Get on the right foot!
Are they screaming that while the Chicago 7 trial movie is being filmed? All days for them to be shooting a movie.
I know, probably not the best, but that closure is until 7 p.m., and they're going to keep filming because after that, the closure will extend west to Wabash until 5 a.m. So definitely want to be aware of that.
Now, the fake protesters and the real protesters, will the actor protesters and the real protesters get together? That's really a question.
Are you the extra? Wait, what? No, I'm a teacher.
If you take the red shirt off, if you have, I got something underneath the red shirt, mm-hmm. you take that off, you can become an extra in this movie.
There you go.
You can make like $35.
Mm-hmm.
That's great.
This week on Chicago's Best, an entire episode dedicated to a side staple, but this time it is the main attraction, Chicago's Best Fries, Sunday night at 10 on WGN-TV.
All right, we've got news coming up in just a few minutes from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. People should know that. Ben Bradley is joining us from the WGN-TV Newsroom, where there is, Ben, I don't know if you've seen the helicopter shots here from above downtown, but woo boy.
Yeah, the Chicago teachers are on the move. They've just reached City Hall, from what we're hearing, as they continue to take their demands and demonstrations to the streets. Day one of the teachers' strike, just about in the books. It sounds like there was now from that Skycam 9 picture, it looks like they've surrounded the WGN truck outside City Hall. Remember, we come in peace.
They're not going anywhere anytime soon.
No,
it's by the numbers out there.
Yeah, if you're going to be getting out and about in the loop today, it's going to be a little tricky there as those teachers demonstrate. Although,
I will say this: teachers are the least likely to, get all rowdy, violent, and start, looting.
We don't expect them to overturn the news van.
No.
Yeah,
I would hope.
But it's interesting. I think that the tenor.
Oh, Mrs. Frazier, what are you doing?
The tenor of the demonstrations, I think, has been much different than we saw in 2012 when, teachers had, two people who were polar opposites who were clashing, right? Karen Lewis and Rahm Emanuel.
Oh, yeah.
And it was emotional. It was factual. It was personal. Yes, exactly, Anna. Look, these teachers have been offered a contract that has a significant and sizable wage increase. They've pivoted to other issues that they argue are important for kids' education. When there is some state law that suggests teachers should only be allowed to strike, over core issues to their contract. Mm-hmm. But it's interesting that City Hall has not yet played that card. And as this goes on, we'll have to see how that develops.
Well, it can't get played, though, is the point.
Oh,
because they're asking for things that are not relevant to specifically the four corners of their contract.
That's the next salvo in this. But if City Hall goes to court to try to get, the teachers ordered, forced back to school, that would be an escalation, would it not? And, from the little chirps we've heard coming out of the bargaining sessions today, it seems like there was some progress, but not enough to make anyone think students will be back in school tomorrow.
Right. And every day that goes by, I guess it gets more and more challenging for parents. I know you've been interviewing on WGN-TV today. You've had a lot of different angles, a number of different angles on this. And the parents, how does it seem like they're doing, Ben?
Well, our Gaynor Hall has been out talking with parents who had to find some place for their kids to go today, unless they're lucky enough to be a stay-at-home parent. We visited a school that's being used not for education, but essentially for child care. And you know, these are places, obviously, the district has allowed us into. So, you know, they have plenty of basketballs and activities and computers set up for the kids. We certainly don't know whether that type of supervision and fun times are happening at all of the locations. But the city did have a contingency website that's been up for many days now, where you just put in your zip code, and whether it's a local school or a YMCA or some other facility, you know, there were a lot of places available to drop your kids off, which I think is great if you have like a 14 or 15-year-old. But, you know, if you have a 6-year-old, a 7-year-old, and, you know, you know your kid's going to be safe there, but
relatively.
This
I mean, you think
this is pretty traumatic, for a kid to not have their teacher there. So all
and
of this continues
to play. By the way, we are going to get such a reaction to lucky enough to be a stay-at-home parent. I just want to point that out.
You don't think somebody who has that ability to choose to stay home is fortunate? I think that's for a lot of people, they'd love to do it.
Oh, yeah, of course.
But
just keep digging, Ben. Just keep digging.
No, I think you're right about that. I think that obviously that's it's still, you know, people, particularly people who have a number of kids, that is a difficult job in itself. But you're right. Not everyone can do it when they want to do it.
Right.
Exactly. And that's what we're talking about is people who...
have the resources.
Have resources.
Well, resources is another issue because I got a whole bunch of alerts from all the activities my daughter's done over the years saying, hey, we are open on these days. We're running activities for like
pottery,
Windy City,
and arts and crafts,
injuries,
and gymnastics.
Yeah, all these different things. But a lot of them are expensive and really expensive. You know, it could be $100 a day. And if this strike goes on day by day by day, how many of those can you afford? Even the YMCA, I believe, in most locations, according to one list I saw, charges between $35 and $60 a day.
It's a daycare cost that you're essentially paying for. You know, they can call it a summer camp, they can call it a strike camp, whatever they want, but there's a cost associated with it.
And as this drags out, that becomes more and more costly for parents who can ill afford it, right? So it starts to get even more stressful.
So you wonder in this town where the pressure will actually come from, because I think there are a lot of people who are looking at this and going, well, this is a pretty good deal that has been struck for them financially here for the teachers. They are looking for other unions to get more jobs at it, you know, within the system, right? For counselors and for other people.
Social workers, nurses, et cetera, which those positions have been starved from schools. But, you know, the other backdrop to this is
I would just finish the point.
Oh,
which
sorry.
Is that,
did you want to hear yourself on your own show?
that's a very complicated question right now. But, I want to know where do they think they're going to get a ton of public support here? Because parents get mad at this, right? Because parents are like, well, you're going to get paid, and they're going to be and they're making more money now than the vast majority of parents.
The average teacher salary in Chicago right now is into the $70,000 range.
Right, and we'll go up to the $90,000 range, which will put them ahead of certainly above the mean of those who are in the parent pool.
With pension and health care that most people also don't have.
Right. And so... I'm not sure the parents are going to support them.
Well, parents do right now. Isn't the public opinion on their side?
Initially, I think teachers have a lot of goodwill, as they should. The question is what happens to that support as people become more tuned in to the financial numbers at play and as the strike goes on. I was going to say, before you rudely interrupted me on your own broadcast, the other thing at play is don't forget that Supreme Court decision when Bruce Rauner was governor, the Janus decision, which basically said state employees can't be required to contribute the full amount of union dues. So a lot of unions, state, you know, government employee unions have felt threatened by that and concerned about, you know, their sources of revenue. And so unions have felt under attack both in Illinois and around the country. And this is just one more example of their attempt to flex their muscle.
So we're going to be joined, actually, by the vice president of the CTU coming up at about 3:38 today.
Excellent. So. If you could hammer out a deal on your show.
I've been trying to work it out. See, I think the problem is a lot of people are going to go, whoa, you got your deal. What are you worried about these other people for? And they're not even in the same union, right? So it becomes a question of, is this just a pressure tactic for SEIU, which doesn't enjoy, you know, the best... SEIU is one of those things. It can be very polarizing.
Yeah, there's not as much love and natural support
for SEIU,
the Service Employees International, as there is for the teachers.
And they also supported the mayor's opponent, right? And let's not forget that political piece of this whole thing.
It's going to be interesting. But I'm looking forward to you hammering out a deal in your next half hour.
All right.
We got it. We'll let you know.
Thank you, Ben.
All right. Get Lightfoot to call in. We'll get this thing solved before 4 o'clock.
You know what I'd like to do? Perfect. I'd like to get Lightfoot on the right foot. That's what I'd like to do right about now.
Yeah, they do need to work on their chance.
Don't you agree?
Can you talk to the CTU about that?
They've got some good ones. That's not the only one. They're creative.
What do we want? What was it? Was it a living wage or something?
Yeah, it didn't rhyme. The one I heard earlier today didn't rhyme. You got to rhyme.
Yeah, because well...
Lightfoot is hard to rhyme to.
Well, they got it, though. They got the only thing they can actually
foot.
Do.
They
got
rhyme one with foot. Thing. Right foot doesn't rhyme with foot, exactly. Yeah. It's the same word.
See the light, feel our blight.
Hold on, here we go.
Lori Lightfoot!
Get on the right
foot! What is it? What do we want? What do we want? What do we want now? Because when the first time I heard it, I'm like, I think you just got it. I'm not sure exactly you didn't get it.
You had weeks to come up with these chants.
What do we want?
Fair contract.
When do we want it?
Now.
Fair contract. Pretty good to me. Okay. And then me.
Well, if you have a better one, you can tell the CTU president when she joins us coming up on the show.
Oh, thank you. I will. This ought to go well. Ben, start rolling tape or whatever you people do over there.
Text WGN with your suggested chants.
Yeah.
All right. Thank you, Ben.
Bye-bye.
We'll see you at the 4, 5, 6, 9, and 10 on WGN TV right now. It's time to check in with the WGN radio news. Kim Gordon's got it. And then the CTU vice president joins us. Thank you, Kim. All right. We've got the streets are filled in the Loop with protesters, members of the Chicago Teachers Union, and I think other allied union members are marching there, too, in sympathy. And this is it's as big a protest I've seen a long time in the Loop. I mean, I know there have been a number over the years, but this is a big one. And we'll obviously keep you up to date with Lauren and the traffic about how that's going to affect people as they're moving through. Right now, we're joined by Stacey Davis-Gates, the Chicago Teachers Union Vice President, as we are now fully through the first day of this strike. And just so we know for sure, it does not appear that there's going to be school tomorrow. Would you say that's true?
I would agree that there's not going to be school tomorrow. And I would also like to report happily that we finally got some class size language and writing from the Chicago Public Schools.
Okay, can you tell us more about what that looks or sounds like?
Absolutely. I will say it's inadequate, and it is a start. I would also say that it takes too much to actually get a proposal in writing. We're on strike day one, and, it finally feels like a quality back and forth at the table. That being said, we have significant agreement on a couple of things. One, that class size should be put in writing in an enforceable contract, which that's huge. It's taken 10 months to get there. And then number two, that class size gets to look differently around the city because our city is diverse, and the diversity of our city requires us to have something that fits for the school communities in that space.
Well, so, can you give me a little more detail on that? What exactly are you saying there?
Well, I would say that if you look at Lincoln Square and Roseland, you're looking at two very different communities. So if there's not a one-size-all approach there. The needs are different. The mayor has talked very regularly about having an equity lens in how you create policy in the city. And we've been saying that, too, for the last 10 years. So we finally agreed on some principles, and that is one of the principles. Now, the devil is always in the details, right?
Right.
And so that's where, you know, which is why I'm keeping the broad strokes.
But I will ask you, does that mean, mm-hmm. just so I understand this. So what you're saying is in Roseland, primarily African-American community, that the class sizes should be smaller than they are in Lincoln Square, where it's...
That's not what I'm saying. Not at all.
But what are you saying?
I am saying that class size looks different in different places in this city. It means that Lincoln Square may already have class sizes that are not bursting at the seams. And it also may mean that a kindergarten classroom in Lincoln Square could use a TA because their classrooms have more space. Right. If you look in the 10th ward at places like Grissom Elementary School, you have nearly 40 kids in a classroom there. You can't put a teacher's assistant in that space. You can't even put another human being in that space. So what I'm saying is that all of what we're trying to do are things that we've never done in Chicago before. So we're going to be intentional, and we're going to give communities something that makes sense for their communities. The last thing in the world that you want to do is create a one-size-fits-all approach to school policy. Quite frankly, that's part of the problem that we're wrestling with right now, is that for years, the Chicago Public Schools hasn't respected the voice of communities, hasn't respected the voice of parents at the table when it comes to school policy. The one thing that, you know, I have been very observant of during this negotiation is the number of parents that are at the table just by virtue of what we do. I have 3 children in the Chicago Public Schools. Jesse has 2 children in the Chicago Public Schools. We should not be the only parents at the table. You know, that is one of the things that I hope we take away as a huge impact, is that a contract that impacts the lives of so many people in this city are negotiated by a few. You know, very early we asked for open bargaining, so the stakeholders had an opportunity to activate at the table. We still think that's a good idea. It won't happen because CPS, of course, doesn't want that to happen. That being said, we have to move away from this mayoral control and offer something that looks more like an elected school board. In contract negotiations all over the state, members of the Board of Education in those spaces, they have seats at the table. Elected leadership that is accountable to the areas in which they represent, they're at the table, and that matters in situations where decisions like these impact so many.
Is it let's talk about class size. You mentioned that, and a lot of parents do mention that. 41,000 students currently, according to the union's information, are learning in classes with over 30 students. 5,300 students are also in classes now with 35 or more in a class. So are you looking for the mayor and their side of the city to come in and say, we're going to limit it this number? Do you want that written in the contract language? Are you asking for aides in those classrooms? What is it
we're looking for both. We're looking for class caps, class size caps. Yes, we're looking for that. We need to have a standard that is enforceable, that people can have an expectation to see. Absolutely. I also think that having TAs, especially in the kindergarten classroom, especially in classrooms where you have diverse learners who need extra assistance. Look, at the table, you have a great many of classroom practitioners on both sides of the table. When we're having discussion about school policy, it makes sense, to be honest with you. Now, we may not always agree on where to land, but when the educators are actually having a back and forth at the negotiating table, the discussion is substantive.
What are the top 2 issues, would you say, right now that are sticking points in the negotiations?
Oh, absolutely, class size, which is why it is important to tell folks that they put it in writing. CPS put it in writing. Number 2,
so
we don't have enough grown ups in our bill. It's a huge step,
okay.
You know. And look, I can be very critical of the Chicago Public Schools. I don't suspect that that's going to change in the near term. And I am also able to say where we have gained some movement, okay. Right?
All right. And then and then to the issue of adults in the room, adults in the school.
Oh, absolutely. In the school building. Look, you know, there has been a precipitous decline in the number of people in our school communities over time. And I think that we took, not, I don't think, but I know that we took, you know, a hard turn downward when Ron was in control, especially when Forrest Claypool was the CEO. There was an annihilation of the special education services, so much so that we're under state monitor. That being said, we're having those conversations, and we're trading information back and forth. It's a shame that it has taken the first day of a strike to actually have a quality negotiation that does not look like CPS rolling back gains that we've made in previous contract cycles.
Is that, would you say there's been movement already today on that?
Yes. And okay. You know, nothing to report substantive.
Okay.
And,
but movement.
Look, how do I say this? CPS doesn't have a muscle of collaboration or democracy. And so this is very difficult for them. They lack an imagination when it comes to actually including voices at the table. We have a 40-member bargaining team, elementary school, high school teachers, counselors, social workers, nurses, school psychologists. All of these people are helping to inform what language goes into this collective bargaining agreement, because these are the people who will implement them in their separate school communities.
Okay, Stacey Davis-Gates, she's a CTU vice president. One last question here. There's been some confusion about, or at least contesting, about this notion of the raise that teachers are going to get in this new contract, what's already been on the table here. And there's been talk that it does, the high average here, according to the city, according to CPS and City Hall, is somewhere in the 90,000 range. And that's up from 70 something thousand.
72 right? to 97 is where the average teacher pay would go. Those are the statistics we're getting. And it's kind of front loaded also, so that most of that raise happens in the first 3 years.
So let me say this. One, I don't do math in public. I still have flashbacks from high school. And two, what I will say, I was a history teacher, by the way. Listen, teachers deserve a raise. The issue is going to be how we do it. We have veteran teachers in our ranks who have not received raises in a number of years. Our teachers have experience. So those are the steps in our contract. Our teachers, they go to school and get advanced education. Those are the lanes in our contract. So you have individuals who have master's degrees, double master's degrees, even doctorates who are in our school communities who are stuck and are not getting...
I thought you do get pay increases for having additional degrees. Isn't that part of the contract?
It is part of the contract, but the structure that we've been dealing with for a number of years freezes that pay, and they have not been seeing substantial raises, if any, for the last few years, and that's a problem.
All right, so at least, but the numbers that are being quoted here, because there's a dispute.
The numbers, look, we're going to dispute the numbers. We're always going to dispute the numbers. They're going to say, greedy teachers, you're asking for too much money. We're going to say that we deserve to get paid, and it makes sense. We're going to land somewhere in the middle. That's a fact. That's what the collective bargaining process is about. We can agree that our educators are doing a tremendous work and a tough set of circumstances in a lot of places in this city, and that they deserve pay.
Right.
They live in Chicago. I'm sure everyone has a teacher in their neighborhood. I have several in my neighborhood. I have several.
I have them in my family.
Right. And I have several retired in my neighborhood as well. What I do want to say is that they're doing good work. They live in the city. They're taxpayers in the city. A lot of them send their children to the Chicago public schools as well. It just makes sense. No one's trying to bankrupt the city of Chicago. What we want is stability in the city. The cost of living, it continues to grow in the city, and we want to keep up with that. Look, it's a great place to live. It has a lot to offer a lot of people.
And Stacey, I'm not trying to open up a new avenue here, because I think that's already
I think people do believe that.
Well, I think it's also been agreed to, has it not?
Let me ask you something.
No, we have not agreed to pay yet. But look, let me say it like this. We're asking for a 3-year contract, 5% year one, 5% year two, 5% year three. They're saying 16% over 5 years. Hey, 15%, 16%. You don't see a lot of difference in those numbers there. Our members said yesterday they don't know about 5 years. 5 years makes them nervous because of the deep instability in politics in Chicago as well as the CEO space in Chicago.
Right, but I think 3 years is what Jesse Sharkey is asking for, and that would make it a mayoral issue, wouldn't it? 3 years from now, you can hold the mayor's feet to the fire, and I understand that. Let me just ask you something. We have a texter.
Let me tell you this, Anna, real quick. We can take that out of it. One of the things that, people need to realize that if we had an elected school board, this mayoral race would make zero difference.
Let me ask you something else, because you said you want to see parents at the table. We have a listener who's asking, would you be okay with having taxpayers represented at the table, even if they have no connectivity to the CTU or have a child in a school?
CPS.
We do have taxpayers at the table. Every last one of the members of the bargaining team are taxpayers in the city of Chicago. We're required to live in the city of Chicago. To say that we're irresponsible with the
But you directly benefit from it, Stacey. Let me just. I think I want to represent this listener's question correctly.
Okay.
You're directly benefiting from whatever you negotiate. They're saying, how about the people who are just taxpayers? Should they also have a representative place at the bargaining table, even if they have no connectivity to CTU or CPS?
If we have an elected school board and they run and win on the elected school board, they would have that space, absolutely.
All right. Stacey Davis Gates, thank you so much.
Thank you for
updating. Hey, I appreciate you all. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Be careful what you wish for there. I mean, they want an elected school board because they think they're going to be able to control the school board, but you find in a lot of communities that once you get an elected school board, other forces come in and then change the whole thing. And it goes the exact opposite way that these organizations, whether they're pro-education or they're union or whatever they are, think that they're going to go. So
it's very possible.
I'm not a big fan of doing that. And you see, people barely vote in real elections that count, let alone elections where they don't know who any of the people are. All right, let's check in right now with Lauren, find out what's going on the roadways, because we got the protests downtown. Pardon me. Did that hurt somebody there? I thought it might have. All right, we're good.
Ouch.
The Northwestern Medicine Newsroom is abuzz. Mm-hmm. Kim Gordon is in there, and she will have your news at the top of the hour. We're watching the protests downtown. We just talked to the CTU vice president. Here's what we got out of it. If I may recap very quickly here. Two things that we got out of it that I think are important. One, there has been movement today on two fronts. It seems like the money number was already kind of agreed to, and she did not dispute the numbers we threw out.
She said
we dispute them, but she wouldn't give us new numbers to dispute them with, and she made it very clear that she didn't want to do math on the radio. That was a bit of being kind when I call a bit of a dodge, because I think they've already decided where they want to be on the dollars. The question is 3 years or 5 years. That's the term of the contract, makes a big difference there. So that's the first piece. But there has been movement on that. There's been movement on class size, and there has been movement on other issues about staffing. So I am going to guess that things are moving in a more
positive direction.
Yeah, than they have been.
Highly unlikely it would end today, according to the CTU president. We're getting a lot of listeners and people on the text line say that they're lacking some sympathy for teachers at this point, because they themselves are going to be paying for these salaries and they don't themselves make that amount and nowhere close.
The news coming your way in 2 minutes. It is the Rokan Show on 720 WGN with Anna DeVlantis,
yes,
of course.
Yes.
And all right, are you practicing to go back to school?
Yeah, because that might happen soon, we hope.
A few things before we jump right to the next deal. Keep listening for your chance to win a pair of tickets to the MECOM 2019 Chicago October 24th event through the 26th at the Renaissance Schaumburg Convention Center, world's largest collector car auction. That's what I meant to say.
Yeah.
I read that one too.
There are a few slip-ups there. You have to be sort of a gearhead in order to get through that one. I thought you were, actually.
I'm not this kind of a gearhead. An estimated 1,000 American muscle cars, classics, Corvettes, trucks, hot rods, and so much more will be consigned for sale. Visit Mecum.com for details. Always helps to read
it. I tripped up on the resto. The restoration, I guess. The restored cars.
Now, here is, speaking of things that are restored or things that are interesting, I want to tell you about a little something to do this weekend if you would like to do it. This is the 9th Open House Chicago. And this is a pretty fascinating thing. You know, you walk, if you do like the architecture tour on the river, or maybe you're coming in from the suburbs and you're like, oh, what am I going to, you know, I want to do something unique downtown, something I've never done before. And we always tell people, whether they're, you know, regular Chicago and area people and they just come down intermittently and they want to bring kids down and don't come down here a lot, what do you do? Or if you're coming in from out of town, I always say architecture tour. But that's a beautiful thing, right? On the river and all of that. But it's good. I would say
that's been well highlighted and documented.
True.
And TripAdvisor named it like the number one thing to do in practically the world in terms of experiences.
Correct. However, it's also a little weather dependent. You don't want to do it necessarily when the seals are on the ice floes out there.
No,
right?
Sure.
That's probably a thing. But you could do this. This is an interesting thing. There's a different sort of a tour, an architecture tour, that is done by the Chicago Architecture Center. And that is just, it's a beautiful facility right here at the corner of Michigan and Wacker. Mm-hmm. And with us right now, we have Eric Rogers, who is the manager of Open House Chicago. Now, explain, if people want to come down, what should they want to go do?
Well, there are so many places they can go visit, about 350 participating sites in this year's event. And no matter what you are interested in, you're going to be able to find something that appeals to you.
So this is a walking tour, right, where you can walk into these things?
Well, it's more like a choose-your-own-adventure.
You could go
to one or two buildings. You might not even know the event's happening, and you wander by, see there's a line of people waiting outside, and go in. But then we also know we've got some super fans that are probably going to try to see 20 or 30 things.
And so you get to get into architecturally significant or interesting story significant buildings in Chicago that maybe you've walked by or driven by many, many times. You're like, I wonder what the hell goes on in that building, right?
Yeah, that's the name of the game. It really is a big citywide open house. And, you know, here downtown, there are definitely some big buildings that people are very curious about. Last year, we got limited access as part of this event to the restored lobby at the Chicago Post Office, the building that spans the expressway. And
They did restrict because they're making that into a real...
an office building.
Corporate office building, right. And big companies are going in there.
They are.
Uber going there?
I thought so, yeah. Uber signed some kind of a deal to move a lot of people in there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Walgreens too, I believe. But, you know, that lobby is acres of beautiful Art Deco marble and brass, and it's been lovingly restored. And this year for Open House, it's actually going to be open to everyone to go.
I always wondered, if you had an office that is right over the expressway entrance, mm-hmm. right? You know, the Eisenhower goes right underneath there. Is it cool or scary? I would love to know the answer to that.
Maybe
question.
They should put a glass bottom on it and they can watch the traffic.
That would definitely
Wouldn't that be
make
weird?
It scary. I bet you just don't notice when you're in there. I mean, it is a hulking mass of concrete.
It's like a
and
city,
stone.
And they're going to put. They're going to expand the food court. I don't know if they've done it already. But I was reading about how it's going to be literally a self-contained city almost.
Yeah, and it's going to have a roof deck, which I know is under construction right now.
Oh, roof deck! You also have to have a party up there.
Yeah.
The unto
gotta
music
have green
up on the roof.
Space in order to attract the millennials.
Yeah, gotta have green space. They should probably put a scooter race course up on the roof, too. Or maybe just a scooter lane on the Eisenhower. There's an idea whose time has not
terrible.
Yet come.
top terrible ideas of the year.
Oh, I got more.
Top 10.
I got plenty. All right. So what do you think? People should go to a website here and see what all the different buildings that are open, and then you get to choose. And the times that these buildings are going to be open, too, is that?
Yeah, they do vary a little bit. The event as a whole is this Saturday and Sunday, starting at 10 a.m. and running until 5 p.m. both days. But sites get to pick and choose when they're able to be open. You know, we try to be flexible with them so they mm-hmm. can welcome visitors. And openhousechicago.org is our website, so your one-stop shop. We also have our printed event guide that came out with the Chicago Tribune in today's paper, and it'll be available for free at most of our participating locations.
What's your favorite on the list? What would you say? I know it's like picking your favorite child, but just go ahead. Just give us something.
It is so hard. You know, one of my all-time favorites it's I always want people to go down to the south side or go out to the west side, go to neighborhoods that they haven't visited before. And people do that. Down in Bronzeville, First Church of Deliverance at 43rd and Wabash, one of the churches that's really credited with originating gospel music, but it is probably Chicago's only Art Moderne church. So it's a remarkable piece of architecture with a rich history. And, you know, I want a lot of people to discover it this weekend.
Yeah. That I always do suggest that, too, because people will be very surprised. I take people who are from out of town. Sometimes I'll take them into places that they're like, oh, can we go down here? Can we do this? And the South Side and parts of the West Side have the most amazing architecture.
Absolutely.
You know, you get off the Eisenhower at Independence and, you know, you go to Washington Park and you're like, Garfield Park. And the architecture just on the square of that park is phenomenal. You can do that. There's all those, you know, throughout the city. And people are like, what? And there's you know, people waiting for the bus. And there's, you know, there's stores. And there's people walking the streets. And you're like, and the image that people have in their head of what's going on versus what is actually going on is very, very, very different. And so it's a very, these are cool things. All right. So now there's one, though, I can't figure out. I saw it on your list. If you go up in the North Lincoln Park area, Lakeview area, there's that statue of Alexander Hamilton, and he's not spinning around and he's not singing, but he is solid gold, which I think is kind of weird, right?
It is sort of strange.
It's like the only gold statue we've got in this town, and there he is. There's Alexander Hamilton, gold. Which I'll bet you people are going to that more so now than they ever have. People would go by before and go, I don't know who that is. And then you just tell the kids, that's the guy from the musical.
Right.
But across from that is the national headquarters of the Elks.
Yes.
And I had no idea.
Beautiful.
It's a beautiful building. And it's like this really kind of out of nowhere, like a spaceship dropped this like classic, neoclassical, I don't even know what you would know better than I, structure down into the middle of this park, and I'm like, what the hell goes on in there? Because it doesn't look like they have offices.
Well, they do have offices, although that's not what'll be open for open house, but under the dome is this spectacular rotunda. I can't remember the number, but something like 9 different kinds of marble from all over the country and the world. It was built originally as a memorial to members of the Elks Order that gave their lives in the First World War, and then it's been sort of rechristened as a memorial for all the subsequent wars as well.
Wow, beautiful.
But it's, I mean, an absolutely spectacular space on par, certainly not in the scale of Versailles, but in terms of the quality and the workmanship in the materials that you see there, it's a real stunner. And I'm sure that there will probably be 5,000 or 6,000 people that will go check it out.
Oh, I'll bet.
I would love to see inside of there. I've often wondered the same thing.
Right. You go by it and you're like, what goes, it must, I mean, that's a big building and I don't know, can you go in there? You know, there's another thing too that's kind of wild. I don't think this is on your tour. You know, there's like a museum of surgery.
Oh, that is on our tour.
I've been
that
in that tour? Because yes, that has, they have events there every once in a while. They do rent it out.
And there's like old like scalpels and stuff.
Oh, it's
from throughout history.
A little freaky.
Right. And you're just, you walk through that and all you want to do is go, thank God I live in 2019. Wow,
thank exactly. goodness for modern medicine.
That's right. It's
that's
also
great.
Like one of the most beautiful lakefront mansions and one of the last few left on Lakeshore Drive.
Right.
So you get to appreciate the architecture and the really wild kind of terrifying collection.
Yes. Take public transportation. Yes, no parking around there. It's on Lakeshore Drive, just south of North Avenue.
The one that stands out for me is the Boathouse, 2700 South Eleanor. And I didn't realize you could tour a boathouse. Those always seem so fascinating to me.
Yeah, well, so that is...
It's the Bridgeport, right?
Yeah, in Bridgeport, park number 571, I believe. Very eloquently named. But that's actually
a
project. So the same architect who designed Aqua here and Vista going up next door. And, you know, there's a really active club there. They get together early every morning and go out on the river, and they're really excited to show off this new building that facilitates that.
Awesome.
Yeah, that's not too far from the Duck Inn. I suggest you go there before, during, or after. That's what I do. All right, I really appreciate it, Eric. Thank you so much for being with us. Eric Rogers, manager of Open House Chicago, and it's a walking, you just go to it, do it yourself, architecture tour.
walking, rolling, however you want to do it.
Okay.
Just get out and go.
Lots to check out.
And again, really the website, if people want to go check this out for themselves, is Chicago Archi- Wait, tell me again.
OpenHouseChicago.org.
OpenHouseChicago.org. Fell off my little screen there. I don't know anything, Eric, unless it's on my screen. Thank you, sir. Appreciate it.
Thanks,
Let's
Eric.
Check in now with Lauren. What's going on in the traffic? Don't forget. Pair of tickets to Mecum Chicago 2019 coming your way next hour. If you are interested in muscle cars, classics, Corvettes, trucks, hot rods, whatever it is, repos. What did
Restos.
You say? Restos.
Restos.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Not
repos. That's what the cool kids call the restored cars.
Then stay tuned because it's coming your way in the 5 o'clock hour. Also coming your way in the 5 o'clock hour, Top 5 5, of course you won't believe. And Mr. Richard Roper is going to be here in the 6 o'clock hour. He's going to tell us if Maleficent 2 should have been made it in the first place. First of all, wasn't that the worst name ever for a movie? Maleficent.
Maleficent. She was the bad queen from Snow White.
Yeah.
But, so you had to use the name. Wait, you mean the name for the movie? Choosing that as the name is the bad thing.
Yes.
It's like always impossible to spell.
Right.
Like calendar.
That's true. Is it A-R or E-R?
Yeah, I always struggle with which one goes first.
K-A-L. All right, so Maleficent 2, and actually the one I'm interested in is Zombieland Double Tap. He's going to be talking about that as well.
Both bad names.
Yep, and Paul Rudd's got a new Netflix series, so he'll be telling us what's going on there. And one of my favorite Chicago Blackhawks, Dave Boland, is going to be with us. Two-time Stanley Cup champion with the Hawks in 2010, 2013. And he's going to get one more shift on the ice, which is a really cool thing. They're doing that tomorrow night as they take on the Columbus Blue Jackets at the United Center as part of their extended homestand here. And it's going to be a lot of fun because we'll be there Sunday. We'll be there Sunday. Speaking of double tapping the Bears and the Hawks on Sunday. And I'm going to see how many people I can take with me to do that. Kind of mini bus. And then on Tuesday for a very special blessed event that's happening on this show as well. People need to, we'll tell you all about it. For those of you who like to follow the social shenanigans of this program, and there are plenty of them. There's going to be a week of social shenanigans on this program. And I would like you to please take part.
Oh, also, Texter reminded me Maleficent was Sleeping Beauty, not Snow White. Totally correct.
Oh,
I'm slacking today.
Classic mix-up.
I think the zombie brain is getting to me.
Wait, surprise, Lauren.
Well,
I know. A rare misstep on that kind of stuff for you.
We're very disappointed in you, Lauren. but I also would like to know, what's the difference between those two?
I don't really. I'm like, oh.
Two sleeping princesses.
Yeah, didn't Snow White sleep, too? Didn't they have a problem with her? And then all of a sudden, the
guy kissed the dead girl. She woke up.
Yeah.
Spoiler alert.
That's right. And that's weird, isn't it?
A little bit.
I know. If someone's lying there lifeless, the last thing I'm going to... I don't care how beautiful. The last thing I'm going to think about is, like, you know, locking lips. I am. And especially if there's, you know, all the little worker guys running around like the people are elves. We got the news coming your way in 2 minutes. Thank you, Kim. It's always good. It's breaking up downtown, right? That's the most important thing.
Yeah, I haven't seen any closures in a while.
I just saw a tweet that all the roads now are open back up.
Okay. Because it was... now, I'm being told, I had a law enforcement source texted me just a few minutes ago to tell me that this actually was not the largest teacher protest downtown. It looked like it to me because I was just eyeballing it. Turns out this is the second largest, according to those who count these numbers. This
After 2012 being the first?
This with the 2012 was bigger.
Yeah, I remember those numbers. I did cover that. I was out, I think we were showing the helicopter views of that, and that did seem huge. This one also seems sizable, but that's good to know.
Oh, actually, they're saying to me CTU protest in 2016 was larger.
Oh.
Okay. But you know what they do, though? I got to tell you, these teachers are smart. You know what they do?
What do they do?
They serpentine around the loop. So they end up closing off all the different streets at different times, and then the effect of it is they close everything down. Because it's like, what was that? Lauren will know the answer. That was a thing where the snake, it was a video game where the snake was going through.
Snake?
You know, thing. That
are you talking about centipede?
Yeah, it's called snake.
Centipede.
I used to play that.
Well, they also have
that
snake.
Was probably predates Lauren.
No, not at all.
They still have it,
remember
though.
The first cell phones, the only game they had was actually snake. And you'd go around and you'd eat like the fake dot apples and you'd keep growing.
And then when they got really low, you were like dead no matter what because it kept breaking up on the bottom.
Well, you had every apple you ate, you grew larger, but you can't run into yourself.
That's
and it
right.
It would get faster and faster, so it'd become difficult to not run into
but
yourself.
But if the centipede, yeah, oh, right, that was into yourself. If it ran into its own piece, then it would break up, and there would
right.
be tons of different centipede pieces to keep track of. And
I thought you, the way the games I played, you would lose if you just crashed into yourself at all.
Okay, there you go. That's what
I
they
think there
did.
Are a bunch of variations of that game.
The CTU did not crash into itself. It was able to snake its way or centipede its way through the loop and screw up everything today. But as we talked to the CTU vice president, she was on with us about an hour ago, and she said that the news that came out of that is that there has been progress today. They're not there yet, but there has been progress today. That's why I took away from the interview. If you'd like to hear the whole interview, go to WGNradio.com. We've got the podcast up right there. Now, there is, every year at this time, there is a big television conference in France. Or do you, like Johnny Depp, call it?
France.
France. France. It's at Cannes, or do you call it Cannes? It's there. It's where they have the very famous film festival. They also have this television conference. And what it is a television conference of where they sell programming all over the world. And then they sell programming formats all over the world. Now you may stop and think to yourself, well, what is it? You know what? They're too inside baseball, aren't you, Ro, talking about this? No, I'm not. Because I remember when So You Want to Be a Millionaire came out in the early 2000s. Or You Want to Marry a Millionaire, I should say. That was the name of it. So You Want to Marry a Millionaire. Or The Bachelor, where you're going to meet somebody on a game show and then get married for the rest of your life.
Or Dancing with the Stars. I thought they had no chance of surviving.
I laughed.
I did too.
Who's going to want to watch ballroom dancing on television?
Like what?
With has-beens.
And now they got the one where it's like, who's singing? And it's a big, like...
Right.
Have you seen
the
that
voice?
One? No.
The one where the were in the mask, right?
Oh, it's called
the Masked Singer.
The Masked Singer.
Yeah,
and then they're like, "Who's singing?" And then they take off like the costume head, and it's like, "Oh, it's that celebrity."
Oh, it's Barbara Streisand.
Right. But it's the dumbest show ever. And I've been seeing previews like season two coming soon. I'm like, what?
Well, what happens though is Jenny McCarthy and Ken Jeong get all excited about it. So you have to tune in because if Ken Jeong is confused and, you know, he's a doctor. If right. he's that confused by it, you're like, oh, then I must watch this. It must be incredibly confusing.
There's a competition show for everything. We watch the British Bake Off in our house because my daughter loves it, and it's like one of those things. But as Lauren pointed out yesterday, there's a face painting one or a makeup one. There's like a variation of this for everything.
They used to have Face Off, which was kind of the costume design and things like how my face looked yesterday competition.
Because you had your face done by a professional makeup artist for a Halloween photo shoot.
Yes, okay. he personally was on Face Off twice.
Oh, all right.
Cool.
Mm-hmm. I just want to explain that because I don't want people looking it up on social media and going, oh my God, what happened to her? Mm-hmm. All right. So here are television game show ideas or other reality show ideas that are hot in Europe because that's where all these things start and then they come to the United States.
Right.
Are you ready?
Like mm-hmm. American Idol, so many others.
Five guys a week. A woman.
Do I want to know?
A woman invites five suitors to live with her.
Wow.
Then gives them their marching orders if they fail to please her.
Whoa.
The guys all live with her at the same time, and they have to compete.
They all live together?
All at the same time.
Yeah. All at the same time.
This is a show that'll last. I'm sold already.
In a clip from the forthcoming season, shown in France at this event, divorcee Amy tells her hunky beau, "It pains me to have to eliminate you." That sounds dirty on every level. One of the trends here, according to this article, is that they're going toward more feminist based programming where women are in control, not the men. But that's what The Bachelorette has been, right?
But they have The Bachelor too, so it's sort of
Kardashians are in charge.
Did
you see what she did to Kanye?
I think Kanye already came pre.
No,
done.
She turned him into like, I mean, last week was the first time Kanye tried to stand up for himself in the whole marriage.
How'd that work out?
Didn't work out well. She was like, I'm not putting up with this. And then he was like, all right. Undercover twins. Twin sisters who decide which of eight men must charm and impress them in a Big Brother style challenge.
Oh my gosh. They should have made it twins switch lives for like a week or two and see how well they do in each other's shoes and how many people they can fool.
Yes.
That would be a much better show. Like
that we're too. Taking that to France next year.
Yeah, let's go into France.
Yeah. Now here's the best part. The problem is that these guys think they're only dealing with one woman. None of the guys realize that these are twins that they're dealing with.
Classic twin shenanigans.
I kind of like the idea of this.
Then they're not very observant. Twins may look alike.
Oh, you got to go left hand, right hand thing?
But it doesn't take long to tell people apart.
Especially if you're getting naked. I mean, there could be some things that are different.
They're getting naked? I'm intrigued.
Are they? That's what I assumed.
Kim went full aggressive.
The guys are not aware that the single woman has an identical twin, and the sisters are free to bamboozle the guys, as well as helping each other make the right choice.
What if the twins then cross each other, though?
Now, what if they fall for the same guy?
Exactly.
Right? That becomes the big issue.
You guys are writing the scripts for them.
Evil twins.
We need to go to France.
Or how about this? Ireland's generation dating.
Oh, like dating cougars and whatnot?
What is this?
Puts its trust in more old-fashioned matchmaking. They recruit a grandmother to help find the right partner for a millennial.
You got a triangle for this? A lot of talent there for this show.
The twist is that the young person must also help the grandmother find love and companionship for her by negotiating dating apps like Tinder. So grandma's on Tinder, and the grandmother is trying to find, going to the church social with the millennial.
To pick out the appropriate person.
I believe at the end of this show, everyone's on Tinder.
And that's why STDs are up.
It's true.
Oh, God.
That is true.
It is true.
A new Spanish show argues that love comes where you least expect it, puts together five people whose unusual lifestyles have stopped them from finding Mr. or Ms. Right. Among the candidates in his first season is a raw food vegetarian who lives on an isolated farm, the captain of a luxury yacht, a fairground worker. I think we'd call those carnies. And a handsome free spirit who wanders the world in a tent with his dog.
Dude.
Gee, you think there's some lifestyle habits there that are keeping him out of the dating pool? Successful dating pool?
I'm just going to tell you that the luxury yacht captain's got the best shot here.
100%.
Although, I don't know, the guy with the tent and his dog. He can always just pitch the tent in the backyard, though, right? Or like his date's home.
Yeah. Are you outdoorsy? Can hang out outside in my tent. I don't love that pickup line, but someone might.
I'm out here with my dog, Che Guevara. If you need me, I'll be out here with the dog. Dog's real friendly. Don't worry about it. He loves everybody. He may not always appear to, but he loves you. Don't let him in the glass door, whatever you do, unless I'm present. He does have some boundary issues. Down, Che Guevara, down. Down.
So don't be allergic to dogs, and he's not going to help with rent.
I think that is totally true.
Why does everything have to be a dating show?
Because they work. I think they work.
I don't get why. Like, why are we also intrigued about bad dating?
Here's the radical new social experiment of Single Town.
Okay.
Coming to British television this season. In it, couples are put to the test, breaking up for a trial separation where they live like singletons for a week in a luxury apartment, introduced to a procession of tempting suitors.
Oh, God.
Shackles off.
You can see where this goes.
They're encouraged to do whatever it is they want to do.
Nice.
They will also be able to watch how their exes are getting on with their dates next door.
Gosh. That's so much drama. You could just, you can feel that one. Totally.
This one you know is coming, dude.
Oh, yeah.
Fox. You just know it.
Remember Fox did that Joe Millionaire where they created a fake millionaire?
Yeah.
And all those women were thinking they were going to marry this guy with a castle, and he was just like some dude.
Just a construction worker. Gotcha.
Still like me now?
Yeah, I remember that.
I bet that started in Europe.
Yeah, yes, it did, as a matter of fact. All right.
Why do they all start in Europe?
Because they because there's a lot of TV networks in Europe, and there's like there are here now too, but there are really no rules there. We have a very proper media environment here. There, it's a lot less proper. There's nakedness and swearing and sex and broadcast TV there. You ever been to Europe and just turn on the TV and flip through the channels?
Most recently, I was very shocked when I heard the F word on TV overseas. I was like, whoa.
You can't go four channels up on your clicker without you know, seeing, you know, some guy's hairy back going back and up and down. Honest to God. It's like Greek porn. It's like I really don't. It's a guy in a Speedo, and the next thing you know, they're on a beach and things, you know, they're in a little bed somewhere. It's weird, man. Guy wears socks though. That's the funny thing. Guy's hairy back and he's wearing socks, and it's on television. It's not like on your iPad or any places it's supposed to be. It's like on the TV, and you're like, oh my God, where are the kids? Are there kids here?
Well, I was always freaked out when I went to England because my mom's from there. We had family that the Sun, the newspaper on page two, would have like a topless woman.
Yep.
That's what? Just what they have in the newspaper, which
for
is
years, for decades.
I don't even know if it ended, but or page three or whatever right. It is.
Yeah, you get to see the
page three, I think it was.
Right. Oh. As they used to call them, factory gate papers. And we're like, that's not what the newspapers are for here, is it? You know, and then you stop and you wonder, how did we end up like this? Oh, I figured it out. I got it. All right. Oh, anyway, I know we're almost out of time, but I got to do this one too. I do love this one. Drag queen fairy godmothers. This is an Israeli show, Queens of Love. In it, three drag queens take a lovelorn woman under their wing and help her find the right partner.
That kind of works.
They work. They teach her the inner workings of the male mind. The drag queens then question her suitors and investigate their private lives to find skeletons in their cupboards, as it says here. Now that is so funny.
That's much better than Grandma.
That's very totally. Funny because it's sort of like that's very Israeli there too, right? Because it's like, all right, it's like a Yenti, but it's a Yenti who's also Mossad, who's going to be looking up at what everybody else is doing and make sure. And then at the end of the deal, the drag queen might actually have to assassinate one of the suitors, just in case it doesn't work out.
Oh, gosh. Oh, gee.
Let's check in now.
We'll change that in America.
I don't know that we will. Lauren, what's going on the roadway? You have not been. I was going to say you've been hearing things that you haven't been hearing. What you will hear is the news from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom coming your way in just about 5 minutes. Kim Gordon telling you, getting all caught up on what's happening at the top. Plus, in the next hour, a pair of tickets to see the Mecum Chicago 2019 auction. So if you're interested in really cool classic cars or hot rods, muscle cars, Corvettes, trucks, the stuff that Mecum auctions do, they're going to be bringing that entire auction thing here October 24th through the 26th at the Renaissance Schaumburg Convention Center. You ever see that on TV? We were just talking, if you're just joining us, we were just talking about these television programs that are going to be starting in Europe this year.
Mm-hmm.
A bunch of like dating shows and other kinds of weird twists on shows. And you know that's going to be coming to America. If it's successful there, it comes to America within a season or two. That's how we ended up with Dancing with the Stars and some of the other things along the way.
American Idol. Don't forget that one.
Right, right. There was originally Pop Idol in Britain.
And America's Got Talent.
Mm-hmm. That's where people sing and juggle chainsaws, right?
Do what is pretty much anything.
I mean, American Idol, with American Idol, too, I thought, well, I got that. I understood that. It was a talent show, talent search. And some of those American Idols have gone on to great things.
Oh, phenomenal mm-hmm. things. Success.
Carrie Underwood.
Yep.
Kelly
Jennifer
Clarkson.
Hudson from Chicago. Mm-hmm.
Right. Jennifer Hudson was sent home. Like, you know,
number eight or something.
Sort of like,
bye bye, we'll never see you again. Watch out.
She's about 14 seconds away from an EGOT, right?
Exactly.
And again, suck on that. What's your name with the
Simon
T-shirt?
Yeah, Simon. Yeah. Who's had his whole face redone, by the way?
Really?
Oh yeah, check it out.
Does he look even angrier?
No, he looks nicer. Actually.
Oh wow.
Yeah, but he's very pulled. I think is the point you're trying to make. Anyway, we were just talking about those. If you've ever seen the Mecum Auto auction thing, it's one of those things. It's like poker on television. When I first saw poker on television, I'm like, God, I'm not. Why would I watch guys playing cards? But you get to see the cards, and now it becomes kind of interesting.
The strategy behind
right.
it suddenly becomes evident. Yes. Who's playing what? Who's doing what? Who's bluffing? All that other stuff.
And then they auto auction. You're like, God, who wants to go to an auto auction? But when you see the Mecum auto auction on TV, you're like, wow.
Kind of cool.
Stuff I'm not even interested in.
Isn't that true?
It's funny how television can do that to you. All of a sudden, something you have zero interest in watching, you just get stuck watching. And then you start to become addicted to it. And then you don't want to tell people that you're addicted to it. Like Dateline NBC, that I believe that half the women in America are addicted to.
It is good.
And Law and Order.
Exactly.
Grandmas actually love Law and Order, SVU.
All right, we've got the news from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom coming your way in 2 minutes.
It's the top five on the Rokan Show.
Five.
Let's go.
Four, three, two, one.
Now, it's the top five at five on the Rokan Show with Anna Tavlantis. Sponsored by the Hip and Knee Center, where they help you feel new again.
Ready?
Yes.
Yes.
Get on with it.
All right. Here we go. Checking in at
number five.
Monica Lewinsky is back. She's got a PSA. You know, she's a cyberbully advocate.
Yeah.
Anti-cyberbully.
And she's been around the world talking about that very issue, saying she was patient zero.
She was on the Today Show discussing her own life, her experience, being harassed and shamed and ridiculed since 1998. Of course, that's when her relationship with Bill Clinton became known. Now, in the light of the Trump impeachment inquiry, she says, as compared to the political turmoil, what is it like now compared to then?
Well, I think, you know, impeachment is a constitutional crisis, right? So obviously it's much bigger than me. It is. But am I affected personally? Sure, of course. I mean, people are making comparisons to when Bill Clinton was impeached. I've become a punchline of a joke a little bit more than normal. And I've, you know, I found myself the last few weeks, I'm certainly more sensitive. Some people in my world might say cranky, needed more self-care. But I think, you know, the truth is like if we're talking seriously about impeachment, it actually means we're all affected in the country.
Seems she's been incredibly introspective and seems so strong at this moment. Coming from where she did when she went into hiding, she moved to London, she was afraid of her own name and all the things that she describes in the wake of what happened when she was, 22 years old?
Right. And what is she, 40?
In her 40s
45
now
or something like that? Yeah, this is, these two things are so completely different. And as you recall, the amount of attention that was given to this was, you know, the parallels are interesting in that you had a new Republican Congress for the first time. Republicans were running the House of Representatives since World War II in the mid-1990s. And a lot of it was a reaction to an attempt to do Hillary's health care, right, when she was first lady and was like, who elected the first lady? And so there was this whole conservative wave led by, you know, talk radio, digital media that was just in its nascence then, the, you know, CompuServe and things like that had become very, very popular. And were very popular with, you know, with the conservative intellectual elite at that point. And then all of a sudden Newt Gingrich rose to it. And then they were deciding, how are we going to take this guy out? And there were a bunch of conspiracies at the time, whether it was Vince Foster, the White House aide who ended up killing himself. And they said he was murdered because he knew stuff about Hillary Clinton's dirty Whitewater deal from when she was a lawyer back in Arkansas and all those things. I mean, you go back and you remember there was a lot of the conspiracy stuff. The environment was rife with things. So what they ended up landing on as part of the Whitewater investigation was this affair, totally unrelated to anything else, this affair that the president had with the intern and that he had lied about it. And so because he had lied about it, then he had to be impeached because he had lied under oath. And it's really interesting when you see, you know, a lot of, you know, young versions of old guys now on Capitol Hill who are going the other way. This is a little different because you're not dealing with a sexual indiscretion, because that's water under the bridge. That's all changed, man. I mean, that I remember being so mad at Bill Clinton because my daughter was young at that point, and the notion of oral sex was in the public ferment. The kids were talking about it in fourth grade. You know, and so then I was
one of the medical journals called it not really sex. I mean, there's politics everywhere on that issue because of what was going on in politics. But I just think you look at millennials today, and I don't know that they would, I mean, they would just look at this at such a different perspective today, post Me Too movement, what happened to her as an individual. It's just viewed so differently under this, with this lens of today, 2019.
Right. And maybe in part because of what happened back then, too. I mean, it was a cultural shift. This is different because now we're talking about international influence. We're talking about a lot of different things here that really are not, that add up to sort of your more classical impeachment issues, not just based on a guy who was in his, at the time, in his 50s, taking advantage of this, an intern. And he was the president of the United States. I mean, what were the only other choices there? Although, you know, it's interesting how she, as in the years, she went from being, well, I was a willing participant then, to realizing that because she was 22 years old and she was dealing with the president of the United States, it's really hard to be a willing participant in that. So it's really a different time. And I'm glad she's all about the anti-cyberbullying, but isn't that exactly what cyberbullies go right after? The first thing they go after is the anti-cyberbullying. I think we have to be in the position of just ignoring it.
She's been bullied to the extreme, where I'm not sure it even matters anymore to her.
Well, right, but I mean, for everybody, I think we have to sort of look at that and just,
yeah,
we have to somehow treat the troll like the troll doesn't exist, because the troll doesn't really exist, because they're not doing anything, because they're in their basement or their grandmother's basement.
Kind of cowards, right? Yeah. Wouldn't you say that?
And they feed off the response.
Absolutely true.
I never have understood that. But that's who those people are. And they're walking among us.
They are. And they're, I mean, they're just weak people. If you have to just go after someone and that's your entire focus, there's something wrong with you.
Right. What have you done for me today is what I would like to know for them. All right. Here we go. Checking in at
number four.
On the first day of the CTU strike, Chicago Public Schools CEO Janice Jackson spoke with John Williams earlier today on WGN, responded to a radio ad put out by the CTU claiming the state gave the city an extra $1 billion for funding.
The additional funds, it's all documented in our budget. We went from a district where we were cutting budgets and into putting new dollars into our schools. We put $31 million in equity grants. We put more money in bilingual education. We put close to $30 million in special education, close to $100 million in early childhood education. And so this fantasy that this money somehow came and went into a black hole just doesn't make sense.
All right. And then about an hour and a half ago, we talked with CTU Vice President Stacey Davis-Gates on this program, and she talked about the confusion that is in the media about how much the raises are going to be, because as you pointed out, Anna, the average that a teacher is going to make is going to go up from $72,000 to $97,000. And you brought that number up, and she was not willing to dispute the math of it specifically, saying,
we're going to dispute the numbers. We're always going to dispute the numbers. They're going to say, greedy teachers, you're asking for too much money. We're going to say that we deserve to get paid and it makes sense. We're going to land somewhere in the middle. That's a fact. That's what the collective bargaining process is about. We can agree that our educators are doing a tremendous work and a tough set of circumstances in a lot of places in this city, and that they deserve pay.
Okay. But she would not dispute the numbers that we threw out.
No, she didn't. And there's a 38% raise for that support staff, which I think, you know, there is some sympathy for people who have to live in the city who can't afford a two-bedroom apartment. If you have a family, I get it. They're among the lowest paid employees. They, under this new deal, would get a 38% raise. My mother was one of those people. She was a clerk in a Chicago public school for 20-plus years, never made more than $40,000. I understand that. But the numbers here are starting to be at a point where a lot of people who are taxpayers have reached out to us and said, we don't make that much, we don't have that deal, and now we're being required to help pay for this deal. I don't know how long the sympathy is. It is on the teacher side right now, if you look at the recent polls that have been conducted, but how long that lasts as this holds out.
All right, we'll get to your three, your two, and your one. And Megyn Kelly makes her return to television. At number three, Wait till you hear this. It all comes your way. But first, let's check in with Lauren Lapko. What's happening on the roads?
For some young people, getting to graduation day seems impossible. Go inside one group dedicated to helping kids beat the odds. Tonight's cover story on WGN TV News at 9 o'clock.
Top 5-5 continues.
Number 3.
Megyn Kelly returned to television last night, first time since she broke with NBC, and she's calling for an outside investigator into NBC.
Here's the what they're saying. No settlements of any kind. No settlements. Well, that's a legal sleight of hand. You can get paid out as a sexual harassment victim in something other than a settlement. You can get what's called enhanced severance. That's the situation where the receptionist is suddenly getting a seven-figure goodbye. She was like an amazing typist, did so well, right? And it's just severance. It's not a settlement. It's just like, hey, and by the way, if you could just be really quiet about NBC forevermore, we'd really appreciate it. That's what we need to know. They haven't gotten specific about what monies were paid out to whom. Show us the money.
Okay, now that is really interesting because Ronan Farrow's new book, which is the one that outs Matt Lauer and the woman who claims that Matt Lauer sexually assaulted her, and what other payouts were going on at NBC. Now, she's on Fox talking about that, where there have now been a number of books and TV miniseries, and now a feature film.
Seems to be a little something going on over there, too. Obviously, we know that. But I think what she... Look, I thought there was a little tinge of irony to that whole setup there, too. Tucker Carlson and her talking about the very issue that was so relevant to their own network and so out there. The one thing she says is different is that in the case of CBS with Charlie Rose and so many others, and NBC, and Fox, they asked for an outside investigator to come in and figure out what's what. They didn't allow the company itself to investigate itself. And she says they need to do the same thing at NBC.
All right. And she said, let's see, is this NBC brass on this, or is she talking about the NBC denying? All right. Wait, there's more here on Matlock. Okay, let's play this.
The number one thing that needs to happen now is they need to release any and all Matt Lauer accusers from their confidentiality agreements. NBC says it has nothing to hide. Great. Let's not hide anything. Show us all of the agreements, the enhanced severance agreements that were reached, or at least the numbers, so we can see which ones pop out, which ones are super high, and are they all women, and do they all have a connection with Matt Lauer? And number two, release the women from their confidentiality obligations.
You know, it was really interesting that NBC and Fox have chosen to go after each other.
Yeah, it is.
As arch enemies here, right
and
down the street from each other.
They're all kind of guilty of the same stuff, right?
Yeah.
Which is what your earlier point.
But so when she went from Fox to NBC, that was a big deal. Because I remember in my little short stint that I had in and around Fox News Channel, there was, when you were in the Fox building on 6th Avenue in New York, it was very pointed toward NBC. I'll never forget Glenn Beck, when he was working at Fox, walked down 6th Avenue and went to the headquarters of NBC, 30 Rock, Rockefeller Center. And he looked at all of the friezes, all of the public art on the side of the building of Rockefeller Center, and he ascribed crazy conspiracy theories to all of it. And it was all part of this whole NBC, RCA into NBC conspiracy for world communism and domination of mind. It was like, oh, this is crazy stuff. And I'm like, I'm watching this thing. And I'd worked with Glenn. Uh-huh. And I'm watching this thing. And I'm like,
wait a minute.
Oh my God, he has lost his mind. And there was that thing. And I just find it really ironic. So she went to NBC. That drove the people at Fox nuts. Now she's returning back to Fox to talk badly about NBC. Does she return to television, do you think?
I think there probably is room for her. There's all kinds of talk of, different competing conservative networks are coming. You read about this in the trades,
yep,
that there might be more networks.
All right, checking in at
number two.
News channels.
Let it go.
Oh, God.
Let it go. Can't hold it back anymore. Let it go.
All right, so this was like every kid singing it, it drives everybody nuts, right?
But the kids love
it. Frozen. If your little kid saw Frozen, specifically your daughter saw Frozen,
yep,
next thing you know, they got to sing that. They're just running up and down in the kitchen screaming that. Now, and some of them are not always on key. Frozen 2 is coming out now.
Woohoo!
And we have the song called The Next Right Thing. Will this be the new Let It Go?
Just do the next right thing. Take a step. Step again. It is all that I can to do the next right thing.
Okay.
Is that Idina Menzel also?
I think that's Kristen Bell.
It's Kristen Bell.
The Anna character.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Beautiful voice.
Adele Dazeem.
Let it go.
As John Travolta said.
Can't hold it back anymore.
I don't think the next right thing is going to be the... I don't think that's going to be the big hit. I think they're just letting that one out. Just as not one of those other songs.
Well, the reality is, it, no matter what, there's going to be huge response to the song because it's going to be a big movie because it's Disney.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's just how it goes.
True. And finally...
Number one.
Elijah Cummings, a Democratic congressman from Maryland who gained national attention for his principled stands on politically charged issues in the House, has died. In the Maryland House of Delegates, he became the youngest chairman in the legislature, the youngest black caucus chairman, and the youngest speaker pro tem. In 1996, he won a seat in the U.S. House of Representatives, and Mr. Cummings eventually served as chairman of the Congressional Black Caucus and ranking Democrat, and then chairman of the House Oversight and Reform Committee. In 1996, this was a poem that he read in his first floor speech.
It's a very simple poem, but it's one that I live by. It says, I only have a minute, 60 seconds in it. Forced upon me, I did not choose it, but I know that I must use it, give account if I abuse it, suffer if I lose it. Only a tiny little minute, but eternity is in it. And so I join you as we move forward to uplift not only the nation, but the world. May God bless you all, and may God bless America.
We just posted a podcast that we did with Michael Steele a couple of hours ago about the passing of Elijah Cummings. Michael Steele was the lieutenant governor of Maryland, and it was on the opposite side of Elijah Cummings. Like a lot of Republicans on the opposite side of Elijah Cummings, but had amazing respect for him. Elijah Cummings was 68 years old.
The top five at five.
Science. Oh, man. We do have some. We have a story. We've been trying to get to this for the last couple of days. And now this seems like an appropriate moment because there's just times in the day where you go, I got to just walk away from everything I just heard in the news. And that's what I'm doing right now.
Wash it out of your head for a little bit.
Right, exactly. In case you want to know, that's what I'm doing. This is pointless moments in science where you do have a study, you have a scientific endeavor, you've got a university, you've got a government, you've got some sort of research institution mm-hmm. that has decided to spend their money to prove the obvious. I don't need to know why. I just know when it actually happens, what happens.
Study proves water's wet.
Exactly. This study that the United States government paid $170,000 for.
Sheesh.
From the University of California, Santa Barbara, studied
great
why.
Great place.
Yes, I know. So this is like.
It's like they have so much sunshine and so much perfect weather. They just got to make up things to do.
This is
pass their time.
Win-win here. You're a research scientist at the University of California, Santa Barbara. You get $170,000 to study why coffee spills when you walk with it.
Oh, no way. Doesn't everything?
Yes.
That's a liquid.
It revealed the coffee spills when you walk with it because of the interplay between the complex motion of a cup due to the biomechanics of a walking individual. And given the low viscosity liquid dynamics of coffee...
Gosh.
It spills and sloshes over the side.
It does feel like it spills more than other liquids. Like when I walk with coffee, I have to be extra careful.
Well, what else do you walk with that's
have
open?
Have you ever heard of a lid?
Maybe I'm extra careful because I'm
it's hot?
Yeah. So maybe I'm overthinking it.
Right.
But I'm glad they did this study.
When it hits you, it does hurt. Do you notice it more?
That should be the next study. Why does it burn when hot coffee touches your skin?
The study was woefully lacking in recommendation for reducing coffee loss. Now, again, I think Lauren might have been onto something, but that would cost $250,000 for you to submit that study. Putting a lid on top of the coffee that would keep it from actually
that was Kim.
Sloshing around. Or Kim.
We don't have lids here at the station. Plus, you got to protect the environment. Aren't lids bad for the environment?
Clarification, please. Are they talking when you have a lid on, it still spills? Because that happens if you, through the little drink hole.
Yeah, and that's why Starbucks has those little sticks even that you can put in the hole of the lid.
Right,
the
until stopper. We realized that they were ruining the environment.
Right.
Didn't they get
killing
rid of
dolphins,
them?
Et cetera.
Oh, they're still there.
They're still around.
Oh, they're there.
No, they're there.
And
no,
there's also those lids that sometimes when you drink it and you bring the cup down, it spills from the crease of the lid.
I've noticed the new eco-friendly coffee cups that have gone around to all the chains. Not very good. A lot of spillage.
No. Don't you feel like you're a kid with a sippy cup?
Mm-hmm.
let me just explain. Now, this is a dumb moment in science, but since we're on the issue of the coffee shop and the sort of the vehicles for coffee now.
Yeah.
At the Starbucks, which they want to get rid of those lids anyway, because they say they're getting stuck in dolphins' blowholes. And I make the argument that that little hole is that they can still breathe through the little hole in the lid. If it were really worse comes to worse, but I don't get any sympathy for that position. There is if they fill the coffee up too high, mm-hmm. it gets caught in this sort of flange area around the outside of the coffee lid, and while you're walking and you're sipping the coffee, it drips down your hand.
Yep.
For no good reason. And what you have to do is you have to take the lid off, then you have to take a napkin, and you have to dry the lid out completely. Because if there's any residual liquid at all inside that center crease of the lid from the top of the cup, and I can get at Starbucks, you go, would you like room?
You got to ask for room.
But you have to ask for more room than just, they take it to the very top. I'm like, they don't have to take it to the top. Don't take it. So the things, I forgot what they call that scientific principle where it arches over but doesn't spill. It bubbles up at the top.
We're getting more scientific. We're talking about coffee spilling.
But the point is,
I agree with Ro because I see them. They get casual with it, all right? They pour the coffee in the cup and then they kind of slide it a little bit as they're putting the lid on it. Mm-hmm. And as the study proved, the coffee spills over the ledge when you move the coffee cup when there's coffee in it. So it's like one continuous movement of pouring the coffee, then moving the cup and putting the lid on at the same time. And then exactly what Ro just said, it gets caught in this little crease bubble. And then you put it in your coffee holder in your car, and there's coffee all over your car then.
Yeah.
These are real problems.
It's an epidemic.
Yeah, this is way worse than mm-hmm. blocked blowholes.
It is. I'm cleaning my car every day now. I got coffee all over the place.
But aren't the lids...
Not if you're not a dolphin, though. I mean, for a dolphin, there's nothing more tragic than a black blowhole.
I know. That's my point. You're talking about first world problems.
I'm talking
obviously,
about,
not even close to third world problems.
We're talking about aqua world problems right now. That's with those poor dolphins running around there with the blowholes all jammed up with
running
tube socks or whatever the hell else is in the ocean right now.
Plastics. A lot of plastic. Yeah.
Bad. All right. Now, here's another unnecessary, ridiculous moment in science. The Lego poop study. A study from the University of Melbourne, published in the Journal of Pediatrics and Child Health in November, involved six adults, all of whom were the authors of the study, swallowing a Lego figurine head and then tracking how long it took to get through their system.
This is a study we needed, for sure.
That's truly a bowel blockage.
The participants' bowel habits beforehand were measured by... They're making this crap up. I swear to God. Are you sure that... I mean, I'm looking at the producers that this is real, because I do not believe this.
They got a grant. They had to come up with something. Is this news or ruse?
Well, the participants' habits beforehand were measured by a stool hardness and transit score.
Oh. Who wants to do that?
Now, I want you to just... That's the SHAT score.
Oh, my God.
Okay.
This is not, no, right. You know what? This is not right. This is not right. Because then the second score, dependent variable, was found in the found and retrieved time score. F-A-R-T score. All right.
They got us.
No, there's no way this is real. I'm sorry. Somehow Jeff is telling us, our producer, it's legit. Where did you find this? Do you have a microphone in there? Where did you find this thing? I would like to know. This, I'm calling for a full investigation.
Yeah, this was Live Science targeted this.
Live Science.
Yeah. That's a legit publication, right?
I mean, did they knowingly make the acronym that, or
they had
was this
to
a
have.
Bit, or just like?
Well, let's go to the results and then decide whether or not we actually believe in this study. Scientists found that the Lego head passed through the systems with no complications in 1 to 3 days. The authors reassured anxious parents that the object passes through adult subjects with no complications, and parents should therefore not be expected to search through their child's, you know, effluence to prove the object's retrieval.
Well, the Lego head, you figure, is going to go right through, no problem. But, like, the rectangle boxy ones is where you got some trouble.
Yeah.
Because the Lego head is, like, you know, smooth, it's round.
Yeah, especially on the exit hole. That's bad. You don't need that. That's not going to be good. And even the little knobs on the top, that's not going to be so good. You know, that's going to leave a mark. All right.
It's better than swallowing a jack.
I suppose.
I don't know if anyone plays with those anymore.
I was going to say a jack. I'd double think what that is.
Yeah,
you know, you drop the rubber ball, pick up the jacks.
Yeah, but the jacks, they had that rounded rounded thing on the pointy part of the jack.
Yeah, but it's still like four
Yeah,
like
it's got
points.
Bad news written all over
yeah,
it.
Yeah, I don't think we want it. You know what? I'm going to take that out of the breakfast cereal that I was going to market.
Kids, keep eating, and you'll have your chance to have a free set of jacks.
Right. A set of jacks can be
hidden in your breakfast cereal.
Real apple jacks is what I was going to call it.
Oh.
I thought that was... All right, maybe I'll rethink
yeah,
that.
Yeah, no. It's your second worst idea.
Yeah,
on the show today. What was your first one again?
I'm just trying to stay away from the blowholes. That's what I'm trying to do. Trying to keep the dolphins from having a blowhole blockage.
I like the coffee study. All right, the new coffee cups are not good. I don't care if we're saving the environment or not.
Aren't the new coffee cups just for the cold beverages with the lid, or do they do hot beverages with it?
I made
my coffee at home, so I don't.
Yeah,
do Starbucks not much anymore.
It's a whole new rethought. Coffee mug that they're dishing out across America.
Wait, I got two more here I would like to share with
you. Okay.
Pointless moments in science. Researchers at Johns Hopkins University gave ecstasy to octopuses. Isn't it octopi?
I thought it was octopi and someone told me no.
Okay, so it's octopuses. And they found through gene analysis that the octopuses share the same serotonin transporter gene that humans have, which is known to be the principal binding site for ecstasy. How about that? What is apparently a surprise that octopuses and humans are separated by more than 500 million years of evolution. When octopuses were given ecstasy, the scientists noted they spent more time with other octopuses.
Oh, yeah.
Very social drug.
And engaged,
a little frisky.
And engaged in exploratory physical contact with one another. Ha! That's interesting.
We're not all that different from us.
Yes.
Whoa, you feel so weird. Oh, my God. You have tentacles, too.
So slimy.
It feels like you've got eight arms.
We're all the same.
Is it hot in here? Oh, wait, no, we're in the water.
It's so hot in here, man. Oh,
are we getting boiled? Where are we? Oh, man.
Oh, do you hear that whale music? It's really hitting me.
Right, that's true. Imagine, the whales are so loud. Why are they so loud?
You know they videotaped it and they're sending it little videos to the people in the scientific community.
Mm-hmm.
Check it out.
Yeah.
Octopus
porn is basically what you're looking at right there. Watch this. Hold my coffee and watch this. All right. And this, a research published in the Journal of the American Osteopathic Association wanted to answer the question if a roller coaster can dislodge kidney stones.
Hmm. Oh, God. Yikes.
Yeah, the answer is no.
Do they expect people to pee their pants on all these roller coasters?
I mean, if you have a kidney stone, the last thing you want to do is get on a roller coaster.
Yeah, that actually sounds really painful.
The now, what they did is they found out that if you sit in the front of the roller coaster, as long as the kidney stone was had moved into the ureter, you could actually dislodge it 4 out of 24 times. If you sat at the back of the ride, you could dislodge it 23 out of 36 times. Now, the question, though, is, and then, but they said this is not the best way to do this.
No.
Oh, really?
Again.
Thank you, doctor.
Again. Pointless moment in science. Because what are they going to do? First of all, you know how expensive it is to go to Great America and just get on one roller coaster ride because you have to dislodge your kidney stone?
Well, you're waiting in line for so long anyways.
And so, and if you really, so 23 out of 36, you have to get on the thing at least 4 times, essentially, to guarantee that you're going to dislodge it and sit in the back. Do not sit in the front.
Well, at least that's easier.
Oh, and scientists also figured out how body odor and political belief are connected. We'll save that for next
week. What? Gee.
All right, I'd like to see the producers in the room right after we're done with this. Let's find out right now from Lauren Lapko, what's happening on the roadways? You know what I got in my hot little hand right here, Anna DeVlantis?
What do you have, Rokon?
I have a pair of tickets to the Mecum Chicago 2019 show, October 24th through the 26th at the Renaissance Schaumburg Convention Center.
Nice.
Now, what happens there, one might ask? It's the world's largest collector car auction company. An estimated 1,000 American muscle cars, classics, Corvettes, trucks, hot rods, and more will be consigned for sale. Visit Mecum.com for details. That's M-E-C-U-M. Mecum.com for details. Caller number 19-312-981-7200 rips us off. Caller number 19-312-981-7200. What's that?
Great.
It's interesting. Because, again, that Mecum TV show, it's on the NBC Sports.
I got to check that out. Right? I have not seen it.
When and, you know, I watch a lot of that NBC, the national NBC Sports, right? That's got, it's got a lot of stuff. It's got a lot of horse racing on it. It's got
Formula One.
Formula One. It's got Premier League Soccer, or as they like to call it, football over there. I don't understand. But they've got a lot. It's like Saturday morning. It's a lot of fun. I don't know if I'm not in football season. It's the only thing that kind of gets me through Saturdays. And then the Mecum auction comes on, and I'm like, and I it was initially like, oh, I'm not so interested. And then it was on a little bit, and I watched it. Then it was on a little bit more, and I watched it. And I just got totally enthralled by this because these guys are such gearheads that are discussing this stuff. And there's such specificity in what it is that people are... And they know that it's there's so... It's an amazing economy. This really is... people from all stripes of life who are selling these cars are refurbishing them. And it's not just like rich guys, like everything else on NBC Sports Network. It's because everything... All that is like... There's Polo and Formula One. And all the rest of the stuff. You're like, oh, well, that's... I get that's for like really rich people. And then you look at the auto auction, you go, well, that's... You know, there's like Jay Leno and Jerry Seinfeld doing this. But there are guys who like, you know, go and put these things back together from parts and then are able to turn something that they bought for $50,000 into $250,000 by doing it. It's pretty cool. Actually. So anyway, got tickets so we can go out and see that.
Can you understand it if you aren't totally a gearhead?
No, I mean, this thing will make you a gear...
Make you a fan.
Yeah, absolutely. Make you gear queer and like that in like just a matter of seconds. So just letting you know. All right, we have got the news coming your way in 2 minutes. All right, my friends, Richard Roper has just stepped into the studio. He's going to tell us about the movies coming out over the weekend and a Netflix show that... maybe you want to miss, maybe you don't want to miss. He'll tell you it's Paul Rudd. But the people, they love the Paul Rudd. The ladies, they
I
love
like the Paul Rudd.
Rudd. Yeah,
I do.
And all brought to you, Richard Roper, all brought to you by Architect of Chicagoland. All right. Okay, so yes. Maleficent, which may be the absolute worst title ever for a movie.
Maleficent. I know. I always, when I'm typing that one out, when I'm writing the review, I always remember to write, it's Maleficent.
Wouldn't it be fun to stand at the box office and listen to everybody ask for their tickets?
Yeah. 2 for Maleficent?
You know, Anna, it's interesting you mention that. I want a quick sidebar for you guys. This is very interesting, I found. Speaking of movie titles, you might notice If you go into certain theaters, just the last week or so, and you know, like some of them have like 24 theaters, and you know, you got, on your ticket it'll say Theater 7 or whatever. But as you're walking by, you see like the little strip sign, little electronic sign telling you what's in every theater. Mm-hmm. Like, oh, there's a. They, some of the theaters have stopped doing that. Because that way you don't know which movie you can sneak. You're trying to sneak into a movie. You don't know which one you're sneaking into.
Ooh.
So they've turned off those signs for those little buggers that are trying to get two for one. So if you think like, oh, I'm going to go see Maleficent, Mistress of Evil, mm-hmm. and then I'm going to sneak into Zombieland, Double Tap. You might find yourself walking into Downton Abbey.
Ooh. Wouldn't saying, that be well, a surprise?
There's nobody shooting anybody in this. Spoiler alert. Just a little tidbit for you.
Then don't people who... are legit going to that movie? How did they?
Well, because your ticket will tell you. Yeah, so you know which theater you have to go to anyway. You don't need the sign telling you theater two.
Okay.
Because when you walk in, it's, you know, your ticket will say that, or they'll tell you theater five, Anna, and then you go, oh, that's nice. I can go see this movie.
Okay.
But just look out for
that whole thing.
Going after those little buggers.
Hmm.
Don't be sneaking into extra movies.
Very interesting.
Yeah.
All right.
So, Maleficent, Mistress of Darkness. So, 5 years ago, we had Maleficent, which was a clever idea. It was the story of Sleeping Beauty told from the point of view of the evil, really fairy, but you think evil witch who put the curse on Sleeping Beauty. That was Maleficent. She was the evil curser.
Okay.
And Angelina Jolie played her. So she's got horns and wings and she's, you know, terrible, but she learns to love at some point. And now in Maleficent 2, she has raised Princess Aurora, who was going to be Sleeping Beauty, as her own, basically. She's her fairy godmother. She's come to love her. She's still got a little bit of a temper.
Oh.
But now Princess Aurora gets engaged to Prince Philip. Now, Princess Aurora has been living
He's
with...
He's too old for her.
Well, that's what I thought, you know, and plus he never got his due, right? So Prince Philip, he lives in the human kingdom, and then the Moors, where all the fairies and creatures and everything, they live across the pond.
All right.
So now that they're going to be engaged, Michelle Pfeiffer's evil queen, who is supposedly nice but is really evil, she invites the Maleficents over for dinner. You know how the in-laws have to meet after their kids get engaged or have a big dinner? So we got a scene here. So Angelina Jolie's Maleficent is the fairy godmother of Princess Aurora, but Michelle Pfeiffer, doing the classic evil princess voice, is scheming against her.
I remember the story of a baby. A baby cursed to sleep and never wake up.
Really? Who would do such a terrible thing to an innocent child?
Well, there are many who prey on the innocent. I'm sure your kind would agree.
What do you mean, my kind?
She means humans.
There are fairies missing from the moors.
What I'm missing is some wine.
Stolen by human poachers.
That's the first I've heard of it.
Someone gave the order.
Is it a kid's movie? Trouble. What the hell's going on here?
A lot
here?
Of trouble going on there. And you hear the young prince trying, like, I could just use some more wine. He's trying to keep the in-laws from arguing. But once fairies go missing from the moors, there's no going back.
I'm going to tell you something.
Right?
I think we had this exact conversation last Thanksgiving.
Exactly.
So it's coming back.
What I like about this movie, and I'm giving it 3 stars, is Ooh. The build-up is very much a classic fairy tale. Prince and princess and magical fairy creatures. And there's going to be a big wedding in the kingdom. It's going to unite all the lands and they'll stop warring. But then... and it is a Disney movie, they cleverly turn it into basically a Marvel superhero movie. Because by the end, you just get a giant CGI battle with exploding things and creatures flying in the sky and all kinds of great battles like you do in the world. So it really is basically a Marvel movie cloaked in a fairy tale, which makes it actually more fun than the first Maleficent, which was just kind of creepy and weird.
Is it truly for the kiddos or is this more of an
fine.
Adult thing?
I think it's fine for the kids. There's, you know, it's PG. So,
well, I mean, when the guy's slugging wine because he doesn't want to have trouble, the kids are used to that. They see that.
I love that touch. So like, let's have them over for dinner. You just know that's not going to go well.
It goes all Real Housewives on everybody.
Yeah, so it has a nice sense of humor as well. I kind of enjoyed that. And you know,
sounds
you got
like
Angelina Jolie, Michelle Pfeiffer. Yeah, it's a terrific cast as well.
Plus, as parents, we look for these types of movies that we can actually enjoy with our kids and let it go too. Not in my sort of.
Yeah.
I don't want my kid to want to go see that because I've gone through Let It Go
exactly,
one.
Exactly. Yeah. And this is, you know, it's great to look at. The costumes are fun, you know. Angelina Jolie with the horns and everything. I always think Maleficent kind of looks like Cher. You know, there's all the costume changes all the time, you know, five or six in any given hour.
What did the first Maleficent do?
It did big business. It did
so
pretty well here. It it's both. It's you know, kids. And then, I mean, it's not a lot. It's not something that the Marvel fanboys and fangirls would see on their own, maybe. But they're really well done. People love the story, and it really did well internationally because it, you know, it's set in this kind of, you know, alternate universe of the past. It's, mm-hmm. you know, very universal. Like, I mean, all Europe. These stories. Yeah. Well, they're all based on fairy tales that are from 600 years ago, out of, you know, Europe and Turkey, or if you will, I don't know, whatever countries are in the news.
Love
today.
Them.
So yeah, it did huge business. That's the reason I, you know, because I thought, well, story was kind of told, but they figured out a fun way to get it back. And Angelina Jolie still got that movie star presence, even with the horns and the wings and everything, which I believe she had to have put on. I don't think she came with the wings.
I'm not sure about
She's
that.
A magical creature.
I'm not sure.
Did Brad Pitt put him on her?
Yes,
it's possible.
So she was bad.
She was bad.
Then,
and then she's
good.
So, you know, the whole thing about Sleeping Beauty was she would be awakened by True Love's kiss, right?
Yeah.
After she turned 16. Well, it turns out that True Love's kiss in this telling of the story is from her mother, from Maleficent's, the one who wakes her up in the original, in the first movie. And so
but
finally
that's not
learns
in the
to
real
have a heart for her.
Sleeping Beauty movie, though.
Well, no, not in the Sleeping Beauty movie, but the Maleficent story has been out there. It wasn't a brand new screen. You know, some screenwriter didn't just come up with this. That character has existed in various. It's just another one of those cool things. Let's see it from the point of view of another character.
Oh. All right. And since all of it's in public domain anyway, right? Because it was
These are based on they don't have to put like find like Aesop's great 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 grandkids or you know the Hansel and Gretel Foundation or something like that.
So the syrup is good to go here.
Yeah, we from the Three Bears would like to cease and desist. Do not play our song at any campaign rally.
MGM cannot wait for James Bond to go into public domain. All right, well, good. So you gave it 3 stars.
Yeah,
you liked it visually interesting. And,
it's a great looking film.
All right,
it's really cool, and it, you know, moves pretty quickly.
You know what I'd like to do? I'd like to start rating movies by how many martinis I have to have.
I would say you definitely want to have one. It's also kind of trippy. That's what I like about this, too. It's got some pretty freaky scenes. There's even kind of a tribute to the Red Wedding scene in Game of Thrones.
Oh,
in the
wow.
middle of this. Yeah.
Oh, boy.
Watch when they lock those church doors, kids.
Always do.
Even the fairies are like, oh, boy, what's going on? Why is there no one on the other side of the aisle for this wedding? Spoiler alert.
All right, let's take a quick break, and then we're going to come back, and we're going to find out. So Maleficent 3 stars. We're going to find out about Zombieland.
Yeah, Zombieland 2, Double Tap.
We'll find out about
that. Yeah, you got it.
I'm kind of looking forward to that. And then Paul Rudd has got a Netflix series. We'll hear if that's worth checking out.
I love Paul Rudd. Did I mention that?
Yes, you did. You did that already.
One more time.
All right. Lauren, traffic?
Yes, Ro. Make Sundays your official night to tour the city. Watch Chicago's Best at 10 p.m., then stick around for the latest in shopping, entertainment, and events. See Chicago, 10:30 p.m. on WGN-TV.
We continue on here with Richard Roper. We are doing some review in here. Richard Roper Reviews, brought to you by Architect of Chicagoland. All right, Maleficent 2, you gave 3 stars to.
Yes.
That is an upset, as far as I'm concerned.
I didn't recommend the first one. That's pretty rare when you like the sequel better than the original.
And now Woody Harrelson, Emma Stone, Bill Murray, they return in Zombieland Double Tap.
Zombieland Double Tap. So 10 years since this one. When Zombieland came out in 2009, it was kind of a fresh take on the zombie genre. You know, it was a lot of dark humor, you know, ragtag band of, you know, kind of thrown together dysfunctional family teaming up to take on these zombies after an apocalyptic occurrence. Since then, we've had a million zombie movies, TV shows, comic books, and some of them have been comedies as well. So the premise is not that fresh. They don't really do a lot new with it. But it is fun seeing Woody Harrelson, Emma Stone, Abigail Breslin all together again. You know, and you know that they were in the original, and Jesse Eisenberg, who kind of narrates the story. You know, because Abigail Breslin was a child actor, so now she's playing an 18-year-old who wants to kind of break away from the zombie killers and have her own life. Mm-hmm. So it's very bloody, very gory, very, you know, kind of wink at the screen meta. You know, where we know this is a zombie movie. You know, there are scenes like where one character's reading a Walking Dead comic book and it's like, well, this could never happen in real life. This is unrealistic. So it's like having some fun with that. It's super gory, so do not take the kids to this one. I mean, that's part of the fun of this. It's sort of a rock and roll version of a zombie movie. You know, they even give out awards across the country, across the world in this movie for the zombie kill of the week, depending on if you use a combine in a farm or, you know, some creative ways to kill zombies. So people are vying for the zombie kill of the week. Bill Murray, spoiler alert, was killed in the original playing Bill Murray. He was because the joke in that was Bill Murray as Bill Murray was disguised as a zombie. That's how he was surviving. But then, of course, a human doesn't realize that zombie Bill Murray is actually real Bill Murray. So there's a bounty out on anybody who can figure out who killed Bill Murray. But there is a way that they bring him back, and I'll just leave it at that. So three stars for Double Tap, Zombieland Double Tap. If you're a fan of the original, you can wait on this one, though. If you know, it's 90 minutes. It's pretty much the same movie as the original. But it's mostly fun to see the four original.
You like the first one.
Yeah, and it's fun to see Emma Stone, who's got an Oscar, getting right there in it, wallowing in this kind of crazy, bloody zombie movie. Good for her. She's a good sport.
She is a good sport.
Fun.
All right, now there's three different things that are premiering here, on one on Netflix, the other one on HBO, and then Amazon has got something here.
Well, why don't I tell you about the Paul Rudd one? Okay. We can always maybe get back to the other ones tomorrow if we have time. And this is the one I think that you guys find most of interest. Everybody loves Paul Rudd, whether he's Ant-Man or he's on Friends, right? And he's another one of those guys who at 51 looks exactly like he looked when he was in Clueless. He never ages. So he's kind of the perfect guy. So Living With Yourself, it's a Netflix series, and it's kind of an interesting conceit. He plays a guy who's, 45-ish, works in advertising. His marriage is kind of going nowhere. And he hears about this spa where for $50,000 you can have this rejuvenating treatment that makes you feel younger, stronger, better, a smarter, better, more improved version of yourself. So he goes in, he gets the treatment. Turns out it's actually a cloning factory and doing experimental clones. And they kill off the original you. But you come out of the thing not knowing that because you're your own clone. Problem is, it goes wrong with Paul Rudd. So his original guy somehow survives. So now he's in the world competing with the better version of himself. He comes home that night and he's already in bed with his wife, who's like, wow, you've never been so good. So he's kind of proud of himself, but also jealous of himself. So it's there's a lot of, the therapist couch worth of a series. But it's such a great premise to see schlubby Paul Rudd and new and improved Paul Rudd kind of competing to be the one person who gets Paul Rudd's life. I liked it a lot. So 3.5 stars for that one.
Wow. And how much time do I have to commit to this?
I think it's 8 episodes, 8 or 9, but it's setting itself up to have more than one season for sure. It's not going to be, because it's just too funny. But he's great. And I love the technology because it's not showy. But when they're together or when they're fighting or they're talking, it's seamless. It's not like back in the old days when Bewitched, you'd have one person with a wig on playing, the evil twin Serena.
Right. Yeah.
And then they'd have to switch places.
Yeah.
So that, they make good use of the technology without overdoing it. He's not playing a younger version of himself. He's just playing two Pauls. One has a better haircut. One's schlubbier dresser. One has better posture.
If people have not seen, I know you suggested it, but if people have not seen the Between Two Ferns movie that has come out, Paul Rudd almost steals that movie with just a ton of other great stars in it.
Yeah.
So it's really good. All right. Thank you very much, Richard Roper.
You're very welcome.
We appreciate it. We'll see you again tomorrow on this very radio program. But first,
it is Lucic back to Ferentz with 70 seconds separating these teams from another overtime. Hasn't happened yet, though. Here's one thrown by Brolic that's blocked away by Rask. Help to the back. Oh, do you shot deflected?
That's one of my hockey heroes right now. Dave Bolin is joining us on the Super Celebrity Hotline, and Dave's going to be honored by the Chicago Blackhawks on Friday night before they take on the Columbus Blue Jackets. I don't feel good about the Columbus Blue Jackets. They're too good to be in Columbus, Ohio. But he is there to celebrate not only to do one more shift, which I think is a really, really cool thing.
Yes,
but
it is.
Also to celebrate. This is the 10th anniversary, right, of the first Stanley Cup. Now, it shouldn't be the first Stanley Cup. They've won the Stanley Cup before, but of the modern era Stanley Cup teams. And it started, 2009, 2010 season, Dave Bolin was there. And he ends up, and Dave, I think we've talked about this once before, you will end up, unfortunately, when I do pass away, the picture they will use of me.
I know this picture. It's so great.
Which one?
Is you checking a guy into the boards.
Uh-huh.
And me screaming like a little girl. And that is an insult to little girls. My hands are up in the air. I'm screaming. I'm making this again. I looked at this horrified look on my face because I thought you were coming across the glass at me. It was that moment. So there you go. So you and I are intertwined for the rest of our lives, sir.
I like it. So I'm happy.
Let's talk a little bit about that moment, because there was that's the 2010 team. There was such pressure in a lot of ways on that team, because, you know, as soon as Kane and Taves come together, and they really put together, as you know, just as just such a well-balanced team, offense and defense and these young stars. And they and you had also the old stars, the guys from the 60s, that were every night sitting up in the boxes up there watching you guys. And there was just a moment where there was hockey, not just Chicago, but hockey expectation that you guys were going to win the cup that year.
Yeah, we did. That was the one big year. You know, we came out that last year in 2009-2010. We lost to Detroit. I think that was a big stepping stone for us. That was us saying that, hey, we're close. We're knocking on the door, and
right.
We know we can win this next year after that. So we came in that year with high expectations. It wasn't easy. It was a tough run. We came up against Nashville that gave us a really tough run, but it was that team was unbelievable. There's tons of stars on that team you see now playing all over the league.
I think that Nashville, wasn't that the game where one of those games in Nashville where Duncan against Nashville where Duncan Keith had the dental problem in that game?
No, I think that was San Jose.
Was that San Jose?
I think it was San Jose. I'm pretty sure it was San Jose.
Oh, it was
it?
The unspeakable.
Was it Nashville?
You know what? We'll look that up. Get on that, Jeff.
That's a good one to look up.
Yeah, because that is when Duncan Keith takes the puck basically to the mouth and the stick and the whole thing, and then he goes down and there's just a pool of blood down there, and you're like, oh my God, as a non-hockey player, I thought he's going to die on the ice. I don't know what's going to happen. And then he gets up and he misses, as it turns out, because it was near the end of a period, he misses one shift.
How about that?
Oh yeah, yeah. He was taking T-Fit on the bench. He was just taking them out and handing them to the trainer and hold on to these till after.
Oh gosh.
Yeah, it was San. You're right. It was San Jose.
That's a hockey guy.
That is a hockey guy.
Yeah.
I can't believe it's been 10 years. Bro was talking about how he was jumping up and down. You're responsible for at least one broken TV at the bar we were at, because we're all sitting around. It's 2-1. Everyone's kind of bummed. Like, come on. And next thing you know, you score, and then then you score, and beer just went flying everywhere around the bar. People went nuts, and a couple TVs just shot. It's completely turned off. So it's just an amazing moment. I was watching back to it today when I saw we were having you on, and it just, you get goosebumps from watching it. How often do you kind of go back and think about that game and the importance of that and just everything around it? It was just one of the most special moments in hockey history, not just Blackhawks history.
Yeah, it was. Just how quick that happened. We were hoping, we're like, oh, we'll just come back to Chicago and we'll win the cup in Chicago. We already won it in Philadelia, so let's do it back home. It'd be great to bring it back to the fans. But that game changed pretty quick with Bickla and myself scoring late there and ending it. So, but the game always comes on somewhere. Either we're at a bar, well, living in Canada, you're at a bar and there's Sportsnet. They're always playing different things or someone brings it up. So, and it's always nice to relive it. And it always pops up on Twitter once in a while. And like you said, you get those goosebumps of scoring that goal and winning the Stanley Cup and bringing it back to Chicago. It's the mecca of cities for sports and hockey. And it was just unbelievable.
What was that, 17 seconds? Was that the difference? Was it? Yeah. Because they made the movie about it.
Yeah,
and then all of a sudden, you're down by one, and now you win the thing in 17 seconds. And the world really did change, because then that enshrined. And 15 obviously was a capper as well. You weren't on that team, but 15 was an amazing team as well. But that enshrined, you know, winning in 10 and then 13, it really gave you a sense that you had a generational institution here. You know, you had all of a sudden Chicago was back to those who were old enough to remember the Blackhawks of the 60s. You know, it's all back. You're going to have it. And 500. Do you realize it was Monday night was the 500th consecutive sellout at the United Center?
I saw that. That's awesome. I remember my first game, I was called up and there was 5,000 people in the United Center, and the United Center is huge. And I just remember, I was like, oh, what's going on here? And then seeing the process from that to with John McDonough and everybody coming in, and what a turnaround just for fans coming back. It was great to see. And I love Chicago. I always miss it.
Well, have you had a chance to watch these current Blackhawks much? I know it's only been a small sample size, but what have you seen so far from the 2019-20 Hawks?
I have. I've been watching a little bit. I hang out here in London, Ontario. I help out with the Knights once in a while, and we always look at a few of their games. I think the Hawks still have it. You still got Kane and Chase, and you still got Dunks and Thieves, the core group there, and Crow and Net. And you got two great goalies in Net fighting every night. And then you got DeBrincat and you got Strome. Those are two young guys that are going to step up and hopefully help this team and hopefully maybe win another cup. That'd be awesome to hear.
DeBrincat is very fun to watch on the ice. He's coming into his own game now. He's got confidence. He knows what's going to happen in front of him already before it happens, which is that's the key to the game, right? It has to slow down for you.
Yeah, I do. And he was a huge goal scorer in junior. He put up, I think, 60 goals a year for like 3 years. So he knows what he's doing out there.
You know, what a feeling it must be, right, to be, especially a kid who grew up in Canada and you played juniors and you slept in other people's basements for most of your teenage years, right, before you were able to, make it to the NHL, right? And you're eating at a gigantic kitchen table with everybody and you're like, and one kid doesn't show up again. And you're like, oh, my God, I don't want to be that kid. I don't want to go. I want to stay. I want to keep going. I want to keep moving. And then next thing you know, you're on the top of a double-decker bus in beautiful downtown Chicago on a June day and you're holding the Stanley Cup over your head. That is an amazing twice. That is an amazing thing to think about.
Yeah, the first one was that was crazy. Like we didn't know what to expect. I remember we were getting ready and we were asking all the coaching staff and PR people like how many people are going to be at this thing and they're like, "Oh, it's getting crazy." And I just remember going down, I forget which street it was, straight down to the Millennium Park and like just people hanging out the windows, throwing confetti, and there's rows and rows of people just everywhere. And then the 2013 one was even bigger. Like I remember we had that Millennium Park, and you couldn't even see past like how far it went. And it was just the fans are the best fans in Chicago. I know that, so I'm happy to get back into it. To see them, it's always great to see the fans.
How drunk and/or hungover were you on the bus? That's what I always wanted to know.
That's a personal question.
I think I went 2 days. I got it in my 2 days, and then I had to take a few days off.
You guys got off the plane. I will never forget this. You guys got off the plane, and you went to the Harry Carey's out in Rosemont. That was the first place, and the people are. And I remember that some of the guys were already kind of drunk, and then you move along to the next day, and then the day after that, and you're showing up, and it was blurry-eyed because remember the Stanley Cup was moving. It got here overnight on that night, and then from Boston, and then it kept moving. You know, from bar to bar to bar to bar.
I remember as a fan being exhausted because it was a big celebration throughout the playoffs. You're drinking, you're at the bar, you had a friend's party, and then when you guys win, it was like a 2 day party, and then the parade. It was just,
parade.
Guys, that team brought hockey back for me. I mean, I'm 30 years old. There was a stretch here where hockey barely existed because it's just the dark days of the Blackhawks. It was so cool. It's like, this is awesome. The Blackhawks are back, and to see where they're at now, like Rose said, 500 consecutive sellouts. You guys kind of brought hockey back to Chicago.
Yeah, no question.
And it's a great hockey.
Awesome. I love seeing it.
And it's a great hockey town, too. And, between the Wirtz family and the history of Chicago Stadium and then the United Center and even the amphitheater back in the day when there was, the WHA, WHL, all those kinds of teams that ended up merging into the NHL. I mean, this has always been a hockey mecca. And some great, obviously, from Eddie Olczyk on to, there's some amazing kids have come out of this town. It is just, it's a special moment to remember this. And also, I think for the young kids who are on the Hawks now, who were kids, were in juniors, or were even, peewees or midgets, when they were watching that 2009, 2010 team play and win the Stanley Cup, and now they're on the ice with those same dudes, as you just mentioned, the same core guys. I hope that when you're
I'm feeling old. I just remember when we were at the Hawks, and we were all young, and I remember them saying, "Oh, they got a young team," and now it's like, "Oh, now we're old." So getting a little crazy.
Yeah, don't mention that to Caner tapes. I don't want them to think they're old. I want them to think that they're forever young.
Yeah,
exactly. All right, Dave Boland, you can see him. If you there, I think there might be single game tickets available. Are there for the Hawks? All right, on Friday night against the Columbus Blue Jackets, that's a very good team. That's going to be a fun game. This is a tough stretch here for the Hawks at the beginning of the season. They played great on Monday night. Let's hope that they can repeat it again Friday night, tomorrow night. And Dave Boland, one more shift tomorrow night. Dave, thanks so much for being with us, man. Appreciate it.
Awesome. Thanks for having me, guys. It's always a pleasure.
Thanks. Have fun tomorrow night. All right, let's check in with Lauren Lapka. What's coming up? What is happening on the roadways? All right, Justin Kaufman joins us right now.
I'll take it.
I know.
I used my first name right.
I used to fake I didn't know your name, and now I really
he really did forget it. Yeah. Isn't that really weird? Hi.
Here we go. All right. Now, he just said something very disturbing.
Yes, my family's a Masked Singer family. You guys were talking about the different reality shows, and you kind of talked about that program and kind of glossed over it, which I thought was kind of weird because it's so popular. But that is a show that our family gets into, and I have been left out. Because now with the White Sox season over and I have extension 720s most every Wednesday, I am missed the last two episodes. And you can't really take
Are you
those.
Complaining about being the host of a legendary radio show in the third largest market in America? Because there's a stupid reality TV show where Kim Jong has to act like he doesn't know who the person is under the mask?
I will say this, and we talked about this not too long ago on the show. It may be the best reality program, maybe the best program in television history in using the internet.
Mm-hmm.
Because up to this point, every dumb reality show or any show on TV, whenever they want to use the internet, they go to this website and vote. Or they try to push you to their proprietary website. What the Masked Singer does is everybody Google searches to try and figure out the clues that are on this program. And it becomes a Twitter trending topic, everything about it. But it has nothing to do with the Masked Singer. You're going to Raven Simone's Wikipedia page. You're trying to find out if Paul Schaefer had a canoe.
Can you explain what the Masked Singer is? I don't get to see it.
I believe it was an Australian show, maybe a European show.
Yeah, somewhere from over there. Yeah.
But so you have a singer who's masked.
Furry type costumes that they do that are like that are very
interesting.
Yeah, very weird. And
you've never seen the promo for this during football?
It's a big, I don't know why
a big elephant or maybe a big dog or a big plushy thing, and they sing with these costumes out, so you don't know who they are, and they have these little produced packages before they do their dumb, you know, Mariah Carey cover. And they're in there, they go, I like to bake, but not cook. And you're like, oh, what does that mean? And you go to the internet, and you try to figure it out, and you find out that Gladys Knight actually has, you know, sells pies, something like that. And you're like, it's Gladys Knight!
So they really do get the Gladys Knights of
they
the world.
They did. Gladys Knight was on last season. This season,
But sometimes it's guys like John Cena, right? It's like, all of a sudden, it's like somebody can't really
earlier
sing.
Earlier in the season, it was the first person out was Johnny Weir. Who is the skater, the announcer.
Now the announcer for NBC.
Yeah.
Right?
And, but, you know, they're B-level celebrities, but it's fun because along with the rest of the world on the internet, you kind of sleuth it out. And then, you know, they do them live. And they're not live, but, you know, it's hard to record those and watch them later because there's so much press that's on them when they, like last night, someone got unmasked. And I should be able to tell you because it was last night. And I think it's okay to do that because it's been in the news all day.
Yeah.
Sure.
Who was it?
Paul Schaefer.
Oh.
Can he sing?
No, that's why I got unmasked. Mm. That's the thing. If you the audience in the room votes, I think it is, or the judges. I don't know who votes. Who cares? But it doesn't really matter.
Do you see how it's falling apart here?
No, it doesn't matter.
I'm not really
like
that sold on this.
You kind of want them to be unmasked. And at the end, the loser, the worst one of the competition, gets unmasked. And at the end, you know, there's one standing. It was T-Pain. T-Pain won last year.
Oh, interesting. Oh. 630 tells us it was originally a Korean show. Mm. So your point that they start
Australian
elsewhere
Korean.
And then
I don't know what it was, but
I
thought it was the dumbest thing of all time. Last year, I was like, ugh. And my son was like, oh, we got to watch this. I'm like, this is going to be terrible. I'm going to hate watch this. And I actually like it.
You know what's interesting is that Kim Jong-un won it six seasons in a row.
How weird. He's a great singer right here.
So,
he's good at everything.
That's
like
how
we
know.
Yeah, it's a big hit in our house.
Actually, what they should do is the president should call Kim Jong-un and say, listen, give up your nuclear weapons and I'll put you on the Masked Singer.
Might work. You never
and then
know.
You'll win the whole
Have
thing.
Have Dennis Rodman do it. He might do it.
We'll fix it. Because that's what I do.
I wouldn't be surprised if Dennis Rodman is one of the Masked Singers.
Oh,
right
I
now.
Wouldn't either.
Yeah,
I wouldn't either.
The problem is if you don't have talent, you quickly are off that show.
Right.
Because they are pretty good singers and
But
dancers.
You're doing it for the pub.
Yeah. Last year,
they'll announce a
they have athletes too, and athletes kind of are in the mix. Terry Bradshaw was on it last year. It's like that kind of stuff.
Yes. Yeah. Right. Well, the Fox crossover stuff.
Yeah.
All right. So we were talking about this in because they do this big international convention for television producers in France,
yeah.
and where they come up with these ideas, these crazy ideas for reality TV shows, and then they export them to other countries, and they export the model to other countries, like they did with Pop Idol Become American Idol, stuff like that. So this is one of my favorites, is these twins, right? These five guys have to compete in a house with these to find love with these twins, but they don't realize that they're twins.
They keep replacing each other?
Yes.
That's great.
These five guys think that they are competing with one girl.
And there's a lot of, to get one girl.
There's
probably a lot of bassoon music in the, boom, boom, boom. Like, and a lot of funny stuff like that. There's a lot of hijinks.
Yeah, well, Lapka made a really interesting point. If you can't, after you've been, eyeball to eyeball or, swap and spit or whatever, if you can't figure out that those are two different people,
then you lose.
I mean, is there somebody in the middle of it went, goes to the producer, goes, hey, dude, these are not the same two people.
Yeah.
This one is a righty, and that one's a lefty. I'm not going to tell you how I know.
Oh, gosh.
I'm not going to tell you how you know. But I will say, I'd watch that.
All right.
I'd be. And part of the fun would be like, which one is which? And hopefully they don't ruin it by putting little thing in there. This is Tracy and this is Tammy.
Who knows? No. So Tracy and Tammy. You'd make a perfect television executive. Yeah. Thank you very much.
Thank
we
you,
need to find Tammy and a Sammy, Sammy. So it would be very confusing to everyone.
Change their names.
All right. I know you got something very important coming
up. Yes, our Alzheimer's show tonight.
All right. Yes, that's right. We've been hearing about that all day. All right. Well, Extension 720 is coming your way.